720 WGN. It is high atop Chicagoland of the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane here with you until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio and Dan Long in the booth producing. So you're going to hear an elevated kind of brand of music leading us into each one of the segments. And Dan, what is that? Is that, was that like an oboe? What was that that instrument? It was a reed instrument. I'm not like the greatest.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what the instrumentation breakdown is there. It's a band called Saint Motel.
Okay. All right, well, look it up. 312-981-7200 if you have any requests that may have to go along with. And I think we're kind of easing out. We've turned the page on the holiday music. And so if you do want to hear one last blast of Mariah Carey, you know, or maybe Wham, I guess we could probably accommodate. But if not, you know, something kind of new and something kind of leads you in. It doesn't have to be a new song, but something kind of leads you into 2019. We are going to talk a little bit about the things that people are looking forward to. It's that time of year. You know, you've got that whole, you know, this kind of week, and people are kind of laying the groundwork for those resolutions that hopefully they'll be able to keep into that third week of January and maybe even beyond. And so we'll go through some of those. And 312-981-7200, you can text in your thoughts. What are you going to be doing? What are you going to try to do? Or what do you think people should be doing? If you would like maybe society to take a resolution and kind of accommodate whatever it is that you're doing, you can share those with us as well. We are going to have an eclectic blend of a lot of different things. It's going to have sort of a tailgate kind of theme. This is a time slot where you have the opportunity to really take sort of a world tour, because a lot of people, you know, in our area aren't awake. And so there's other places you maybe have to spin the globe and dabble in some different time zones. And so we're going to be doing that along with the tailgate side, because so many cool things are happening with the Mighty Bears. You got to find the appropriate way to celebrate on the food side. In studio with me for the duration of the program, riding shotgun, is going to be Beth Peterson. You know her from her great work. Of course, she's a Master Chef alum. She's a world recipe champion and a best-selling author of The Tailgate Cookbook. Beth, welcome to WGN.
Thanks, Dane. So excited to be here. I haven't been here in a little bit, and I had big chunky earrings on, and I just had to remove them because I wasn't used to having the headphones on.
Oh.
I gotta get myself back to used to this.
That's right. Yeah, right. You want a big
earring appropriate.
Big chunky earrings. When you said chunky, the first thing I thought of was that great Campbell's soup, and it comes in so many different sizes, whether it's the chunky beef, or you've got the chunky clam chowder.
And
you know,
I went the other way with the chunky bar. Remember the chunky bar? Remember? I know. Coming off of all the chocolate I just ate for the holiday season.
And hopefully that is not going to be one of the resolutions, is people to kind of weed the chunky bar as one of their guilty pleasures out of what they do. It is Esther's absolute favorite. It is one of mine as a kid. It was one of my favorite things. The thing about it's a little bit of a forbidden fruit in the fact that you can't get it everywhere.
No.
You know, and it is, you know.
Can you get it anywhere now?
Yes, you can.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a couple gas stations I'm aware of in the area where you can go ahead and they usually carry a chunky bar. Occasionally one will kind of fall by the wayside, and you'll be like, hey, chunky bar, and then they'll just give you that shrug because apparently I was the only customer. So if you're not buying enough chunky to support the marketplace, you can't do it. As chunky as the bar was, and now granted, you know, when I was a smaller person, everything seemed bigger, but the chunky bar is less chunky than ever, so maybe its resolution was to slim down a little bit. And you know,
or maybe you just remember it being chunkier than truly ever was.
Well, you've
you know
noticed
how that is when you're a kid. You think things are so much bigger and better.
As a parent, just like me and so many other of our listeners who've had to kind of outfit whether it's the Halloween situation, you understand that the fun size has become, it depends on, I guess, what's fun for you, but it's become smaller, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I was surprised looking in the kids, just looking. I didn't take anything, of course, out of the kids' Halloween bag. But the teeny tiny little Snickers, do you know what I'm talking about? There's the fun size, and then there's half of the fun size. It's like a cube size. It's the mini, mini, mini chunky.
Do they name it something different, or is it just...
It just has, like, instead of Snickers, it's just got, like, an S on it.
Oh,
it doesn't
even
have the
room
full,
for
not even enough room for the whole logo.
Wow.
I know.
Well, you know, you can make a case. It's just like those restaurants that have, you know, tinier portions. It's like, you know what? We're trying to portion control you.
Right. I had a couple portion controlled Snickers, I have to say, for that bag.
So you can build those into your tailgate. We'll be talking some tailgate. On the tailgate side, we are also going to hear from Sean Gale. You know him as number 23, a safety for the 85 Bears. He was also part of the Super Bowl shuffle. He'll be joining us to talk a little tailgate, as well as Taste of the NFL, which is their, I think it's like the kickoff for hunger or how to kick hunger. We'll hear from him about some of those things. And it's the way that the NFL gets involved and kind of engages some of their celebrities from some iconic teams. And they get in there and they support groups like the Greater Chicago Food Depository and others in each one of the NFL cities. So we'll hear from Sean Gale as well as, and I know you're excited about this, Carrie Nahabedian.
Oh, yeah. So awesome.
She's a James Beard Award winner, great chef here, Brandy, Naha, all the kind of things that you'd want. But she's also a huge sports fan. If you look on some of the social media, she's at Wrigley Field all the time. She's a huge Bears fan.
I was surprised to hear you say that we're going to be talking about tailgating with Carrie. This is awesome.
Yeah, well, she does not, fine dining does not define her,
mm-hmm,
right?
So right.
She gets a little crazy out there, and, oftentimes you've got to imagine that she'd be in the restaurant working on something, and then the lure of sports, she's a Chicagoan, is going to pull her away from the culinary side. So she'll be there. Also a good mutual friend, and this is part of our kind of world tour thing, is Lou Bank.
Lou's the best.
What is it? Like, if you had a First National Bank of Lou, what would the deposits be? It would be all...
It would be all mezcal.
All mezcal.
Of course.
I see you've met.
I have met Lou, for sure.
He will be calling us live from Oaxaca.
Oh,
yeah, right.
Very exciting.
Well, so, and I always love the situation when you can get a little taste of some weather that's probably better than, and if it's not, then hey, we get the last laugh.
I mean, it's kind of balmy out right now, though. I don't know. I think we're doing pretty good in Chicago for right about now, don't you think?
It's good to, yeah. Oh, it could be way worse.
Oh, yeah.
Could be. This time last year, if we'll remember, kind of turned the way back thing. When it was right around this time, we were at 10 below zero.
Seriously?
It was, don't you remember? I mean, it was like right around New Year's and Christmas.
I might have blocked it. I don't remember that.
I'll be the one to tell you.
Thanks.
Tom Skilling with it. He'd tell you, too. It was really, really cold. So, yeah, I think we're lucking up, but I've got to figure that it's a little bit warmer in Mexico right now. So we'll talk with him. And then you go from a place like that a little bit later on in the program, talking a barbecue guy that I got to meet as a fellow judge at the Jack down in Lynchburg is from one of the international teams, Mirko Leitner. He's going to call us from the mountains of Italy.
Ooh.
Where they've got a an extreme barbecue competition.
That's so cool.
It is.
In Italy?
It's very
really?
Cold. Yeah. I think he was telling me when they were up there working on some of it, it was maybe 20 below zero or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they're doing a full-on barbecue competition there?
We'll talk to them.
Okay. I can't wait to hear.
Yeah.
This is an international show tonight. We've got Mexico. We've got
Italy
and
we've got
Chicago.
Berwyn.
We'll be Berwyn.
Berwyn will be calling. And then you think about some of the resolutions, 312-981-7200. You can share those as well. We'll get into some of the biggest stories of 2018 that don't have anything to do with tailgating, like the royal wedding. I'm sure you have some thoughts on that.
I'm so excited to talk about that.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, of course, there must have been some kind of royal tailgate.
I'm sure there was.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Fancy, tea tailgate or something like that.
Sandwiches with the crust cut off. We'll talk about what that might entail. All that and much more. Plus your calls, 312-981-7200 and text as well. And get this. This is it. The gift that keeps on giving. You think Christmas is over. Gifting is gone. We have two tickets to the Winter Classic, Blackhawks versus Bruins, an original six matchup that is going to take place at an iconic sports stadium not too far away, Notre Dame Stadium. And we've got two tickets we're going to be giving away. Dan Long is going to come up with however that kind of gifting vehicle is going to take place. Any ideas, Dan?
Yeah, no, I don't know what the hook is.
Okay.
Again. Because they haven't played since Sunday, whatever day that was. Sunday, early Monday we were here, right? So I have no further animal sounds to play from the booth.
For those people that are listening to the program, Dan came up with, I guess a couple of the people on the broadcast post game show they made some cat noises. It was like that. That is as much as it was.
And,
that was it. That was all of it. And Dan had said, "Hey, you know what? Coming up, between 2 and 2:30, when you hear the rare." Then you can call up in the fifth caller after that.
Oh, there's got to be something.
But they did. Yeah, lots of people were involved, and so people are excited about it, and we'll give two
it's
more.
It's a pretty special prize, I would say. I mean, it's
New Year's Day, too.
New Year's Day at Notre Dame Stadium.
Yes.
Wow.
I know.
Spectacular.
All right, well, we'll talk about that. Hopefully, we're going to give away another pair of tickets for that. So keep it here. Going to have a fun show. It is Dane here on 720 WGN. WGN High atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane here with you until 5 a.m. Beth Peterson riding shotgun with us. for the duration of the program, and you know her and appreciate her work probably in its most tasty form, and that is really saying something. With the Tailgate Cookbook, we are going to talk some tailgating throughout the course of the program. Got a bunch of people with viewpoints on it, their own thoughts, their own books, ideas, suggestions, and all that kind of stuff, because this is kind of, you talk about tailgate season, but it really ramps up when the team that that you know and love is doing well, giving you more reasons to celebrate, more games to celebrate with the playoffs, right, Beth? I mean,
the Bears are doing amazing, and that parking lot, those parking lots are rocking right now.
Does it change when it's got to, you know, and I have joked and will joke, of course, with some of these other people that, you know, at least for Bears fans for the last maybe 10 years, the best part of the whole game day experience was probably the tailgate,
well,
right? Not that it can't be great, and it always should be, and there's just no reason to kind of miss out when you do that. But when you can have the team doing well, the people kind of, you find it, and you've been in situations all around the country with great, you know, college programs, college teams, and a lot of different situations. When the team is doing well, does the tailgate kind of step up too?
Oh, I think that the electricity's in the air at the tailgate when the team is doing well.
Drunker?
People are just happy. They're happier. They're just like super, super lively. I think when the team isn't doing as well, you know, it's still fun and stuff, but it doesn't have that sort of, you know, that really great energy. I mean, tailgates always have a pretty good energy. But
I had never, and you and I have talked tailgating on a number of different occasions. We've talked about the book when it was an idea, a glimmer.
Yes.
Right? And then when it, you know, was there, and then as it's been doing.
You've been there since the beginning,
Dane. And so, well, but the question I've never even thought of before is there such a thing? Let's say your team is terrible. Is there just sad tailgate food? Like tailgate comfort food, you know, like where it's just
like
all you're doing is handing someone maybe a tub of Ben and Jerry's.
Here's Ben and Jerry's and a spoon. Eat up. Your team is like doing horribly.
And a couch. That's it. You know, just pull out the couch. Maybe it's an inflatable couch and you just sit there.
What would that be? What is that? There is probably something. It's just buckets of chili. I don't know what it is.
You just have a monitor there and you're just watching like reruns of Bridget Jones or something. You're just sitting there all sad.
It's big cookie dough ice cream. Yeah. Or just cookie dough, you know. I don't know. That's, I think it's like, all happy fun food though at the tailgate. That's what it does. It livens it all up. It makes it more fun. So, you know, it's all comfort.
So that's the way. We won't even worry about that now, you know. But I never thought of it. You know, some kind of like sad man. Our team's terrible. Like,
get the cookie dough out.
Well, but then there's. I mean, I think
that's beer. Something communal. Isn't it kegs? Let's have a couple shots.
I think there's, you know, maybe some Jose Cuervo or something. I mean,
right.
I think there's always something communal, even in losing. And so I think people can get together and just kind of like drown your, you know, just
drown their sorrows in either cookie dough or beer or tequila.
You can console yourself. All of those problems are not problems that Bear fans have at this present time. So they're getting out of there. Now, when you think about the tailgate side of things, as we kind of get into, I think the Bears are going to be, I think it's up in Minnesota. We're going to have Sammy, as he's known. He is he's the whirlwind producer. He's a thrill ride when it comes to producing. He produced On the Road a couple weeks ago, and his family are recent season ticket holders, and so they decided to get in on the season tickets. Now he describes
is a good time to do so.
I don't know. He described it as if there was some kind of master plan. They're into like their third or fourth year of season ticket holders, and it's, as he said, it's working out. You know,
it's like they're part of their plan.
I don't know how you could have planned for it, because I don't know the.
They're like, we're going to wait until just about 3 years beforehand, and they're going to really on that third year they're going to kick it in.
Is they're into like maybe the second of like four last place seasons? That's when we strike.
That's right.
And they've done it. It's been strategic. They're like a guided missile of good fortune, and so it's working out. And so I think they're going to be up in Minnesota. But so as these games, you know, come into play, is there a difference between the tailgate if it's like, let's say, really cold, or if we've
sort
of balmy? I mean, what kind of, how do you switch it up?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Like, for example, well, one of my favorite tailgates that I've really ever been to is at North Dakota State. And the reason why was because it was a cold weather tailgate, like in September, in North Dakota State. And they had like vats of soup. And
vats,
like
cauldrons?
Like cauldrons of soup. No, you know, like probably just a ton of crock pots everywhere of of soup. And I'm absolutely going to forget how to say the name of this soup, but it's, and someone maybe call in if you know what I'm talking about, but it's a Norwegian soup. It's a potato soup called lakapattis, I think that's how you say it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I thought you were going to say Mrs. Grass, and that's something that I'm pretty familiar with.
No, it's like a creamy white potato-y soup. And I think that sometimes there's even fish in it. But that was like at every single tailgate, and everyone had mittens on. And the structures at North Dakota State are these like enclosed. I mean, everyone has like an enclosed structure. So
it's kind of like an ice fishing
kind of
house.
But internally, it is like bars and soup.
Okay, wait a minute. Yeah. So I imagine.
And they have the horns on because of the bison and stuff like that. It's cute.
I imagine a tailgate situation, you've got a lot of cars. It's a parking lot typically, right? It's some kind of open space there. But they still have. How do they.
They have
erect
more.
These
rather
houses?
Than cars, they've got like these. They're like, some of them are just like built structures, and some of them are.
How did the structure get to the parking lot?
They probably have it on a trailer. It's on a trailer, and they pull it in.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, and also, you know, an RV. They also have lots of buses and RVs and stuff. So a lot of internal tailgating going on, like portable internal tailgating going on. Whereas, like, you know, if it's warm weather, you've got like, you know, ice cream and, you know, you've got like, you know, things for warm weather as far as food is concerned.
Maybe on the beverage side.
Grilling out and it's all outside and yeah.
See,
maybe some tents.
I can't even imagine. But then you've got to figure that would be the case, North Dakota. So you probably have, because the elements oftentimes, you mentioned September, it was a cold weather tailgate.
Yeah.
A lot of times around here, and, you know, we're known for kind of terrible weather, at least when it comes to wintertime, is that, but it, like September here, summer still, you know, for the most part. So they were prepared for just really, not even on, you know, hey, it's cold, we're braving the elements, you know, we're tough. They've given up trying to just be tough. They're just working on survival.
Right.
And so they're just like, hey, let's be in a little house.
Right. Let's just build a little ice house here and make it a tailgate house.
Part of, I think, the fun of the whole tailgate situation is sort of that kind of, you know, it's almost like a festive party city built into the situation. So you can, you know, walk from place to place and high five. How does that work when everybody's in their own individual house?
They're still moving about. They're still moving about, and they're still, they're visiting, you know, they're visiting tailgates all around the
is there a secret knock, a handshake,
it's like any tailgate where you just kind of meander and you say hi and you hang out and people offer you a beer and stuff like that, except now they ask you to come on in. I love that tailgate so much too, and the whole North Dakota State thing, because the entire town of Fargo, far and wide, small children to, you know, grandma and grandpa, every single person in that town came out to tailgate that day.
Well, we'll talk about some of the dynamics of the tailgate. Certainly, we're going to get into the professional side. Certainly, we'll get into what people are going to be doing to support the Bears and how maybe Chicago flavors and ideas can travel right to places, maybe even as far away as Atlanta for the Super Bowl. But I think the dynamics of the college, and we still have, you know, New Year's Day and a lot of these bowl games happening where people are going to be bringing, you know, those teams that say I'm doing the quotes, travel well.
Right.
You know, they're bringing a lot of their culture and sensibilities and kind of their fan traditions with them. And so we'll talk about that as how different it is, how each one, because I think, at first blush, if you haven't given a ton of thought to it, you think of the tailgate is, okay, everybody's doing basically the same thing. You've got a grill. You're going to make some hot dogs, hamburgers. You're going to try to get some food in you, maybe some beer or something before you head into the stadium. But for a lot of these places, and you mentioned a place like Fargo, or some of these college, you know, areas where it is the only game in town.
Right.
We're blessed in a bunch of different ways to have so many different things. You know, you've got, you know, top level college sports, you've got professional sports, we've got minor league sport, you have just about everything. But for some of these, it's the only game in town.
And
it is every bit as big as a professional team as far as, you know, and a lot of those traditions too. So you do, like you said, have generations that are supportive and participating in the specific way that we do it. So when we come back, we're going to talk about some of those different places, whether it's South Carolina, whether it's out east, whether it's out west, whether it's kind of south, maybe Texas, some different ways that people are enjoying the tailgate. We'll get some thoughts from the author of the Tailgate Cookbook, Beth Peterson, as well. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. Then we're going to send it to news. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. Oh, we're going to take it to the, all right. So let's talk. We'll give a little preview then.
Great.
Of the different places.
This is my speciality, the different places around the country.
That we're going to check out. So yeah. I know we're going to talk about maybe some East Coast situation.
Right.
Maybe some South situation.
Okay. Yeah. How about Southeast? That's where some serious tailgate action is going down.
Do you need to have warm weather in order to have like the ultimate expression of the tailgate celebration?
I don't think you do need warm weather. As a matter of fact, like I was just talking about North Dakota State, that was probably one of the better ones that I've been to. But the Southeast, definitely, you know, the weather is more fair. And I was there for a warm weather tailgate, and it was a low country boil. So it was super interesting to see the regionality of the tailgate around the country. You know, from the Southeast, where they do, you know, the big seafood boils, and there's, you know, a lot of seafood involved, to going to the North, where they've got the, you know, the heavy soups and the heavy, hearty kind of, you know, cold weather food, to going to Louisiana, where they've got the jambalaya and the etouffee in giant cauldrons, and they've got I can't remember what they're called, but they're like a box that they put a pig in.
Oh, cajachina.
Yeah, exactly. How do you say it?
Cajachina. They come in a variety of sizes, depending on what size pig that you may have. So we're going to get into each one of those different regions. We'll talk about some of the cool things that they can do. And there's no rules that you can, you know, if you hear this and you are, and I know at night we reach 38 states in Canada, and so you hear something great that may not be something that is on maybe the, you know, the front burner, so to speak, in the area that you are, you can definitely build it in. On the beverage side, before we go to the news, is beer everywhere? Is beer kind of just,
I think,
universal?
Like, that's just like the base. That's like the basics. You got to have a keg of beer, or you've got to have access to, you know, some kind of beer, right? And then, you know, you build from there. And you know, with the whole kind of craze with the craft cocktails, it has definitely entered into the tailgate space. I mean, people are pulling full-on bars up at their tailgates, and, you know, having that signature cocktail, everyone has a taste of it. Yeah, so lots and lots of stuff with drinks.
We'll talk about that, plus some spins on the Bloody Mary, which I think is in the team photo of things that happened at the tailgate.
Oh, for sure.
Very nice. That is the soundtrack oftentimes of the background or the foreground of the tailgate. 720 WGN. It is Dane here in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio. Riding shotgun is the ringmaster. Who is the person? The band leader.
The band leader, right.
Is that the name of them? The one that has the scepter?
Yes.
And they're just shaking?
I think that's the band leader. I think that's what they call them, right? The conductor?
Conductor.
No, the conductor? Is it a conductor?
Yeah, that sounds
okay. And the fanfare that we just heard, that is part of the awesomeness of the tailgate, is being on campus and for the college tailgates anyways. I don't really know if I've ever heard that at a professional, like they've had the big band walking through the tailgate, but maybe.
No, I mean, it's a total, granted, a lot of the same things are happening. People are there supporting, you know, their team, a situation, a
right.
fan base. There's, you know, great food. There's a, you know, a festive atmosphere, hopefully.
Yep.
Usually people are imbibing to a certain extent. So those are the similarities. But other than that, there's a totally different dynamic.
Totally different dynamic. There's a lot more, I'd have to say, there's a lot more diversity in age at the college tailgate. It seems like grandmas and grandpas and like whole community family groups are at the college tailgates, whereas, you know, for the NFL games, for sure, there's definitely, you know, young and old and all that kind of thing. But it seems to be much more family oriented at the at those college games.
Well, and you mentioned some of the places where it is the only game in
That's
town
right.
is the main thing. And so it is bringing out everybody, you know, the mm-hmm. entire sports fans. I know in specific places like Texas, it's like, you know, whether it's high school or college, it is as big as it gets.
Oh, yeah.
Know, bigger than anything that you could do on the professional side. Hard for us to kind of understand, but it is something that exists. From the 773, Mary from Chicago, thanks so much for adding in here. We were trying to figure out what the name of the kind of creamy potato
good.
Soup
yes.
that may have or may not
Mary,
have.
Thank you for
that
calling.
That may have fish in it. It was Lapscavs, Lapscavs.
Yeah. Is that how you say it?
I don't know how you say it.
Lapscouse?
I think it's Lapscouse.
Lapscouse. See, we're getting somewhere.
See, this is why I couldn't remember how to say it.
Also, to Dan from the 630, please play some more Christmas music on the bumps. Help the magic last. Until New Year's. Dan's going to help the magical. I mean, we'll intersperse it with some other things. So let's talk about some of these different areas and some of the kind of very unique vibes that they have on the tailgate side. And then also, too, for the book, how you decided to capture some of that magic and build it into the recipes that you shared. So you mentioned whether it was the New Orleans side of things. Now, that's a cuisine that everybody loves. I mean, we talk about grilling hamburgers and hot dogs. Sure, we all like that. But when you can build like a real kind of cuisine that is also amazing, mainstay for great restaurants and all over the country, and build that into your tailgate experience, that's pretty cool.
Well, you know that it's going to be part of their tailgate experience for sure. Their food was very special in Louisiana for the LSU. I was there for an LSU Ole Miss game, which was spectacular. And the cool part was we actually had a pre-tailgate at one of the coaches' homes, which was really special. His wife hosted a party for their friends and family.
Wow.
And so we had even more special kind of cool tailgate food. They brought this this cake that was very thin layered. Again, I'm going to forget the name of it, but it was a very thin layered, very special, specific to Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge. And then there was a muffaletta dip that it actually... That woman gave me the recipe, and it is in the tailgate cookbook.
Wow! Okay,
I know.
So not only just inspired by, but also some genuine stuff kind of built into it.
Yeah.
And is it the kind of thing? Because it sounds difficult. You know, part of, and we're going to hear from whether it's Chef Kerry Nahabedian or whether it's Sean Gale from the Bears or whether it's Sonny Anderson. You know, there's a lot of things that you want to build into your tailgate, but a lot of you also have the kind of this. You know, and you'll know this, of course, from things like Master. There's like a time limit, right? There's a clock ticket. You can't take all. You've got to get there. You've got to kind of build it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to do it. Then you got to break it down.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there's
the key is planning for sure. List making, planning, and prep before you go for sure. Because you don't want to really be cooking. Okay. So the cookbook is really all about like the appetizers, the dips, the side dishes. So all that stuff can be kind of prepared ahead of time. There's some grilling in it, but the guys kind of get the glory at the grill, at the tailgate. The book has really got all of these dishes that a lot of the folks that bring it to what I call the tailgate table, where you get all those side dishes, appetizers, and desserts. And so, you know, that's all about prep. That's all about getting it ready beforehand and maybe finishing it off a little bit when you get there.
So that's really the key. The key is to like have it all done before.
Yep.
And I think you added something that is very important. And even though that can be part of, I guess, the fun, once you get there, you don't necessarily want to be saddled with all of that work. You want to get in there. You want to enjoy, even if you're the host, even if you're the one bringing it, you know, you want to be able to enjoy a little bit of that action too.
I mean,
you know, so if you can do as much as you can beforehand and have an opportunity to transport it and travel with it. Now, so here's the thing. We've got some of the basics that people do. What are some of those extra kind of little accoutrements, whether it's, you know, with the appetizers or whether it's, you know, desserts even, right? Things that you can kind of build in that can make it special.
Well, one of the things that I love to do is a display, almost like a bar, right? Like, so we were just talking about doing the kind of the craft cocktail bar, but you can do that with food too, like a dessert bar with all different types of, you know, kind of portable desserts, handheld things, small mini handheld bites. Like, for example, I do the chicken and waffle cupcake. That's really fun. It's pretty easy to transport. You do have to do a little bit of assembly when you get there, but it's got kind of like that wow factor, so it's worth it. I've got little hand pies in there that are great dessert items. And, of course, cupcakes are super portable and fun. Then I also have the charcuterie. I call it the charcuterie. Which is
You can do that. That's a clever lady size. So if Dan and I were doing a tailgate, it wouldn't be called the charcuterie. We'd have to steer ourselves away, regardless of maybe what it looked
You'd
like.
You'd be some sausages and some cheeses on a platter, right?
That's what it is—a cheese platter.
A cheese platter with a little bit of salami and stuff on it, right?
Yeah,
charcuterie.
This takes it up a notch, boys.
Yeah,
it's pretty pretty cool. There's a lot of really yummy things on there, like, you know, pretzels and a big cheese dip. And there's, of course, really, really good sausages. Actually, the company in Chicago is called Big Fork Sausages. Our friends.
Oh, I know. It's Lance, our friends. Right?
Yeah, Lance. Yep. I use those pretty much primarily for all the tailgate stuff because they're so delicious. And of course, some great, like, beer cheeses and, you know, have a, like, really fun and just make it really kind of very tailgatey, you know, the food kind of reflects that. Instead of doing a fancy French brie, you know, do a nice beer cheese on the charcuterie.
That would be just some soft cheeses. The fancy French. Well, not, and look, I enjoy a lot of this stuff. And as a food guy, you know, these are all great things. If you can build them into a situation, it doesn't have to be like super manly. It can be, it right. can be pretty cool. So you think some of the inspiration came from things that you saw, enjoyed, that you saw really kind of made tailgates around the country in the college side special. But then you bring up something like chicken and waffles, which is, I don't want to say it's a trend because it's something that's been a mainstay in the South for a long time, but it's the kind of thing where as you go across the country, people are starting to, I think, become aware of it and mm-hmm. experience it and then really love it, right? So
right.
if you can build
they
it in,
they experience it and they go, yeah, we know what they're talking about. This is good stuff. Really delicious.
So what is it about the whole chicken? For those, the uninitiated, chicken and waffles in general, like, what is it about it that has made it such a big trend on the food side?
It's so good.
Other than it's just
this is good. I don't know. I mean, it's like, sweet. It's savory. It's crunchy. It's fried chicken. I mean, it's, you know, it's
yummy.
You
could say that for like a meth lab. What is it about meth that makes it so popular? Like, well, it's good.
I've never had the meth, but I'm thinking that it's even better than meth. I'm just saying, it's so good.
I was using it only as an example for, like, you know, because you look at the description, and I'm going to give kind of an idea of maybe where people are going with it, but it's got, you know, the fried chicken, people love that, and then you've got kind of the salty, then you've got the sweet.
Yeah.
That you build it together. And
it's just, those flavors, they just really, they're good. They're great together. And then, you know, you've got the honey or the syrup on top, you get the sweet, the savory, and then, you know, kind of the waffle in between. It's not super, super sweet. You know, but you've got, I don't know, it's just great. And then a lot of times they'll put a little bit of thyme. I put a little bit of thyme on the top, some fresh thyme. And it, I don't know, it just brings that freshness out. It's great.
Yeah, well, you've sort of dressed it up a little bit. And on the cocktail side, your beer is the base, right? It's one of those things. But, you know, the Bloody Mary is the kind of thing. A lot of times these, you know, the football games start relatively, you know, whether it's college football, a lot of times they're 11 a.m., right?
So, yeah.
People are getting in there kind of early. And so where do you fall on the Bloody Mary side? You like it?
I love it.
Ubon's
spicy.
Makes really good one. There are some really good ones out there, and I think people have their own tastes as far as what it is that they appreciate. But you see the pictures, you know, and if you really want to get some attention, you know, you take a picture of your Bloody Mary where it's got, you know, an entire, like, pepperoni pizza on it.
Right.
You know, maybe a turkey stuck on it.
Yeah,
you know,
it looks like a fascinator. Hanging off the side of your glass, cheeseburger, pizza. Yeah. That's a little bit, maybe more than I want to go for is the full meal in there, but I do like almost a full garden salad in my Bloody Mary. I like to have a lot of the accoutrements in there. I just went to a fundraiser, which was really fun, where they did, a massive Bloody Mary bar. It was the whole event was just a big Bloody Mary bar. And,
that's the whole event?
The whole event was Bloody Marys. It was, wow. It's Bloody's for a Cause, it's called. And they had, like 10 different infused vodkas, an entire, like, island full of different accoutrements, salts, smoked salts, all different really cool ways in which to build, you know, your Bloody Mary. And it was delicious and super fun.
If you can do it for a good cause, it's one thing, right? Because then it takes all of the guilt out of the way. And for you, you know, as a food person, were you there? Did you take any notes?
Oh, I did. And I complimented big time because it was a really, really well done event. And it was delicious. We had a great time. And then, of course, they had a lot of food and stuff like that went along with it. But the Bloodies were the, you know, the headline. They were the star of the show, and they were really great. Now, Dane, I don't know if you remember, but I make something really special. This is my very own thing related to a Bloody Mary. It's called the Bloody Mary Shot.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
Should we go with it right now?
Or yeah, go ahead.
All right. Should we tease on this? Because it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll tease it.
Okay.
Right. So this is a different... We'll talk about some of the other cocktails that are built in. But, you know, when you can take something that is a mainstay and you can build it into something that is portable, right? That you could take with you. You can take with you and enjoy. We'll hear about that when we come back. We've got Beth Peterson. She's the author of the best-selling book, The Tailgate Cookbook. She's going to be joining us, or staying in studio with us as we continue. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. Can you feel the tension, the pressure to come through not only on the field or the court, but also at the tailgate table? 720 WGN. It is Dane here with you until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio. And we've got Beth Peterson, author of the Tailgate Cookbook, in with us for the duration of the program, talking tailgates. But don't worry, we're going to get into some New Year's resolutions, some of the top stories of 2018. And some of them, believe it or not, are less related to tailgates than maybe we would hope. But coming up at later on a little bit, to the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. So stay tuned for that, and maybe some of those stories will be related to the tailgate side. So when we went to the break, we talked about Bloody Marys. It's so popular, like you said, there's an entire mm-hmm. event just built around Bloody Marys. And so if you can try to incorporate, and it's the kind of thing that people, I think, feel like they already have a handle on.
Right.
So it maybe doesn't necessarily make sense to kind of rewrite the entire record book on that for kind of your input on the subject. But if you can get in there with maybe a new twist or some other way to change it up.
This is a twist. It's a fun twist. And at first, when I say it, people are like, Bloody Mary shot. Maybe I've had one before. I searched. I came up with this idea. I came up with the recipe and I looked. There's not really any Bloody Mary shots out there. This is kind of a really cool thing. It's in the book. It's basically a Campari tomato is the holder, instead of like putting it in like a little plastic cup.
So there isn't even a shot, right? So
it's not even a shot glass.
This is considerate. You're kind of at one with the planet, right?
That's right.
You're not creating, you know, landfill situations. There's no dolphins crying over this.
No, there's no like plastic cups getting tangled in fishnets or anything like that. This is totally this is totally edible, and it is the little Campari tomato that we all know and love, right? Sliced, the top is sliced off, super cute, because you know usually they have like the little handle of the
stem.
Yep. So you slice it off, and then you fill them with my Bloody Mary mix. There's vodka in it. I mean, I guess you could do, you know, one without. But why? And you dust it with a little bit of, after it sets up in the fridge, you know, because it's a Jell-O shot, you dust it with a little bit of celery salt. I'm telling you, Dane.
So wait a minute.
Fantastic.
Okay. So we know and appreciate to whatever extent the Jell-O shot, right? So how do you? So is it tomato? Is it like a V8 situation?
It's like a Bloody Mary mix.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, with vodka in it. But I do some special, doctor it up a little bit. The recipe's my own.
And then some gelatin.
And gelatin. And you pour that into the hollowed out Campari tomatoes. Dust it with a little bit of celery salt. You can put the cute little cap back on there if you want to do a little fun display. People take it off and they're like, wow,
well,
look,
you put
it's
the cap
a Bloody
on,
Mary
you can put four
shot.
Or five of them in your coat pocket.
Right. it could so get a tiny messy. Yeah. But they're really good.
And
they're fun. They're impressive. And people talk about them. So they're fun on the tailgate table.
It's a proprietary recipe.
That's right.
Included in the book. And I have heard during the break, we are going to, before we get done with the program today, we're going to be able to give away maybe one, maybe two books.
A couple of books, for sure.
To some of the listeners, so you can kind of get ready to really, kind of make that impression and enjoy your tailgate even more. So in the tailgate book, and we've got a lot of the normal things that happen at tailgates, you have built sort of the surrounding cast, you know, the things that you can get in there on the appetizer side. So what are some of the appetizers that you have in the book?
Okay, so one of the areas that I went deep, I did a deep dive into, deviled eggs.
Oh.
The
deviled egg is more portable. You can really stuff a lot of those in your coat pocket.
Have you tried this?
But if you can do them, and my mom makes a really good deviled egg, and so I really enjoy those, but it is night and day between, like, if you can find a really, really good one, nice. You've really got yourself something.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, they're a fan favorite, I have to say. The deviled egg in all its very forms in the book, people truly enjoy. Did you have any deviled eggs over the holiday?
You know what? Now that I think about it, I don't know that I actually had.
Because, you know, they're good for any party, really, right? They're great. But I've done them up a little bit so that they sort of have a tailgate flair to them. I've got the classic in there. Now, does your mom have pickles in her deviled eggs?
No, it's some kind of, as far as I can tell. I've never broken down the 11 herbs and spices of it, but I think it's some paprika.
Okay.
I think some, whatever you would do, like mix it up with mayonnaise, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm not
really sure.
It's got some mustard in there. I do all of the classic stuff, but then I do a little bread and butter pickle in there.
Okay.
You know, it's almost like a tiny bit of an egg salad situation, but, you know, still like a classic deviled egg. So there's that. And then there's the deviled bacon. And the deviled bacon has bacon actually in the mixture, and there's a little
bit. How does one devil a bacon? And then also, and I don't know, maybe through your research you've come up with this, where did the word devil come in there? Is it some
That's
kind
a
of
good question.
Was there an exorcism at some point?
I actually think it's the paprika that makes it look like it's, I kind of remember reading that it's the paprika that makes it the red color and, you know. It's deviled. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm probably
312-91-7200.
Giving wrong information.
Anybody
out.
Text in if the, you know, the origins of the deviling of whether it's the bacon or the eggs. You know, I mean, I just wonder where that came from.
Yeah, the deviled bacon part is basically that it is chock full of bacon. Basically, the deviled egg is full of bacon, and it has a little bit of brown sugar in it.
Oh, that sounds good.
So it's pretty flavorful, really nice flavor. And then there's a jalapeno one and a chipotle. So we've got some spicy going on too.
It can make anything. It's just like a really nice tie can really set off, you know, a suit or an outfit for, you know, or whatever, earring, jewelry or whatever for ladies. I mean, just one little thing can be the straw that stirs the proverbial drink. And when it comes to dips, now you've met Vivian, right? So Vivian is, so you know, cute. our youngest, and she is an aficionado when it comes to the chicken, either finger, chicken nugget.
Mm-hmm.
She has tried them from coast to coast and
expert.
The key comes down to, you know, sometimes she'll just go au naturel and she just doesn't use it, you know.
No
she
dip.
She doesn't need a dip. Oftentimes she will like a dip.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can come up with some really great dips, I mean, the dips have launched ships.
Oh, for sure.
If you could have the right, you're looking at like a Chick-fil-A kind of situation,
uh-huh,
where not only are they out there and it's a mainstay for the restaurant side, but it kind of just starts a bunch of people trying to, you know, find hacks and figure out ways to recreate it.
Right.
They can't necessarily get
the secret sauce.
You know?
The grocery shelves are lined with the dips and the sauces, right? I mean, you know, everyone's got their special sauce, right? But the big sauce, I think, that everyone loves with the chicken is the ranch, right? I mean, ranch is
good. It's certainly in that team photo,
right?
Yeah. But the people, you know, from this world of the you know, the honey mustard or the sweet and sour lobby, like, they would get in and say that they're, you know, they belong in that conversation too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the ranch probably has it though. I mean, people carry the ranch around in their purses, I think.
So talk about dips
so
that you
the
thought
dips.
Were worthy to kind of build into the book.
Yeah, so one of the one of my favorite dips in the book is it has bacon in it. I mean, it's kind of a cheater ingredient, but it's delicious. So we've got bacon.
You got bacon.
You know
ingredients?
Who always
bacon?
Says is a cheater ingredient is our friend Dr. Barbecue Ray Lampe.
Oh.
He always says, well, you put you through bacon and it's a cheater ingredient.
Just like, I guess,
everyone's going to love that.
Truffle or lobster or whatever. You
right.
just throw that in there automatically.
Right. People are going to love it. Yeah. So, yeah. So I got the cheater ingredient in there, which is the bacon, and then some grilled corn and cheese dip. It is really, really good because it has butter in it, which is probably another cheater ingredient. It's just delicious. It's a little bit unusual, you know, because a lot of the dips have just like sour cream and cream cheese and all that kind of thing. This has some kind of special ingredients in it, and it's delicious. Like, everybody who eats it absolutely loves it. And then the other one is more of a sauce than I would say is a dip, and it is the ridiculously addictive.
Is that the name of it?
Cheese chips. Yes.
Ridiculously addictive blue cheese chips.
Right. Okay. So it's like a blue cheese sauce that goes over kettle chips. And for a while, they were kind of a version of this was served in steakhouses. I think they might even have put steak on top of it. This is my version of this blue cheese sauce, and I serve it in these little individual containers with the kettle chips. And there's, of course, bacon on top and some green onions. It's delicious.
Oh, that's
ridiculously addictive.
It's ridiculously as is meth. And getting back to our meth conversation, I'm just
kidding. A lot of tailgate food is though. It's like that really good, like great flavors, comfort food flavors, and so they kind of you want to just keep on eating it.
And if you're going to build them into the book, why would you put? Why would you put things that people aren't going to be completely over the top excited about it? Before we, I don't know that we'll have time to get to it before we get to Lou, because we're going to have Lou Bank on calling in from Oaxaca.
Wow.
Ideally, but one of the other categories that we've got to get to before the end of the program is the dessert side of things. And I think that's almost an afterthought, on the tailgate side, because you think so much about the proteins. You certainly think about the cocktails. You think about the Bloody Marys. You may think about some of the dips and some of the accoutrements that you could add to it, the snacky kind of things,
right.
But I think you forget about those desserts. You have
You'd
not
be
forgotten.
Sad without the desserts, though. I tell you what, if you've ever been into tailgate, you get kind of towards the end of it, you're looking for a cookie, you're looking for a cupcake.
So a cookie, cupcake, yeah. or one of those tiny little Snickers bars that are only big enough just for the S.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan Long. All right, 720 WGN High atop Chicagoland of the Allstate Skyline Studios. Dane in until 5 a.m. For Nick and Riding Shotgun is the one and only Beth Peterson. You know her from so many different things. Alongside Lou, a lot, from the MasterChef world, certainly that. And then as a world recipe champion and author of the Tailgate Cookbook. And on the line with us now, excited, this part of the benefits of the time period. Is you're able to talk to people, not only because most of the people around us are asleep, many of them are, so we have the whole world as our potential guest list. And Lou, I thought of this when Dan played that, and he just doesn't know that this is probably is anti what it is that you're doing and how you're doing it is anything is the Mas Tequila thing. Of course, on the hand on the pulse of the mezcal world, calling us from Oaxaca as we speak, educating and supporting those great communities and families that make mezcal their life and their passion. Lou, welcome to WGN.
Lou,
hey. How you doing, Dane? And hello, Beth.
Dane, I'm so excited to talk to you. Are you? Is it warm and lovely there?
Well, it is. It's a little chilly right now. It's probably like 62 degrees. It's awful. I have to have my coat on.
Terrible. You're terrible.
A little chilly right now in Oaxaca. Well, let's talk about it because you are there. A lot of people are traveling, and part of a vacation. Certainly you're enjoying what it is that you're doing. But I'm guessing you're probably there in some form of official business carrying the torch for mezcal.
Official business. You make me sound like I know what I'm doing, mate. So I'm down here for vacation. This is the holidays, and I come down to Mexico 6 to 8 times a year, and one of those times is with my beautiful wife, who does not get the kind of freedom of travel that I get. So when I come down for the holidays, it is for vacation, and then I try to slip in a little bit of agave stuff.
Well, okay, so you are enjoying, the sights, the sounds of Oaxaca and Mexico. But I did see on social media there that you were with, Rick Bayleson doing some things for some different events. So I don't think you can take some of the stuff that you do on the support side out of your everyday activities. So for the listeners that may not be aware of it, like, fill them in on Sacred and some of the things that you're doing. Since you started this, you guys have made so much progress, not only in raising awareness of what it is and how it works, but also how kind of it's integrated into the communities in Mexico.
Sure. So, everybody is talking now about mezcal, and there's still very little knowledge at the consumer level, and even realistically at the business level in terms of the restaurants and the bars that serve it, about what the spirit is. So there's this myth that mezcal is all handmade, and it's not. There's a lot of industrial mezcal, but there's also these beautiful spirits that are made in the exact same way that they were made 400 years ago, literally, no exaggeration. The technology used to make these spirits is still the exact same technology that they used when they started making the spirits. And these families are at risk of no longer being able to do that because they're starting to lose access to the agave sources, the sugar source that makes the spirit, because we're all drinking so much more mezcal. And so the big companies are coming in and buying up a lot of the farms where they access the agave. So what we do at Sacred is we come down here, we buy the spirits directly from the men and women who make them. We pay gringo prices, which is usually 3-to-1 for what they pay locally. So that's one form of economic development. And then we bring the spirits back to the U.S. and we do tastings, and 100% of the money we raise goes back to those same communities to build libraries, to build greenhouses, to replant agave, to do earthquake relief. This coming year, we're going to do our first water reservoir as well. And it's to ensure that they can keep doing what they're doing and have a quality of life by doing it.
It's wonderful. And you've been doing this for a long time. I think when I met you, you were really starting to get involved in this, right?
I was starting to drink it.
Right. We were involved in it having me taste some of it. I think I remember that being a big part of it. And it's just so wonderful to what you have built here. It's a really, really very cool. How long has Sacred Agave been alive?
A thing. You know, I've been fundraising since 2013 for these communities, and we only officially incorporated as a 501c3 non-for-profit last year in 2017, March of 2017. Wow. So for years I was raising the money and just literally coming down with cash and getting money sent down directly to these people via producers via PayPal. I never expected it to become as big as it did. But this past year, during 2018, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I want to say we raised something like $25,000 that we granted to these communities.
Wow.
$10,000 of it, actually more than that. It must have been about $15,000 going directly to this middle school in a community that's been built on a garbage dump site.
Oh my!
And yeah, it's 12,000 to 15,000 people living in lean-tos, literally just like shacks that they've hand built, squatting on land that's literally on garbage. And as a result, the community does not get a lot of government support. So the school was trying to find different ways to raise money. They started growing agave from seed. And so we've been buying that agave at gringo prices. We're paying somewhere between 2 and 3 times local price for agave, and then donating that agave to the mescaleros who are in need of it.
You know, here's the thing, and you mentioned early on getting into it because, you appreciated it because you were drinking it. We all remember the ancient proverb, don't get high on your own supply, right? And so if you could find a silver lining in a way to be able to support things. And so that's kind of what you've done. But it's hard because as you have been out there educating people on it, and I've got to say, I'm sure that you've impacted in a way, some of the awareness that has led to some of the appreciation, which has led to some of, the other companies getting involved. Are you finding now, just as you're, educating people individually and have been doing that for years and at the events, that now, or do you have a role or see a role where you can be educating the companies, on how to be more mindful and thoughtful about, maintaining the culture as opposed to just getting in there with the economics being the bottom line?
Oh, I hesitate to, I guess it's hard to hear this in the short sentences I'm using, but I would hesitate to say that the multinational corporations that are making more industrial or industrial mezcal are in the wrong for doing what they're doing. If they pay millions of dollars for brands, as Del Maguey was purchased by Corporation Union, but they paid millions of dollars for those brands, and if they're going to secure that investment, they have to secure the agave. I don't think it's wrong of them to do what they're doing. I don't think it's wrong that they are buying up the farms, and I think buying the farm from Mexicans, they're helping support those Mexicans. I'm in favor of that. I just don't want to see these small families get cut out as a result. And so when I'm doing my education, I wouldn't presume to educate the corporations, but I will try to educate consumers to get them drinking better stuff and paying more money for it. That's the problem. Right. When we drink mezcal cocktails, we're always going to be drinking the cheapest stuff.
Right.
So what I want is to see more people drinking the spirits neat and paying the same kind of money they pay for high-end bourbon and high-end scotch for these beautiful handmade agave spirits, so that money can go back to the people making it, so that they can afford to buy agave.
Having been
a
guy who has spent a certain amount of time with you, Lou, and the things that you've brought back and the way that they're presented and shared in the best way possible, so that you can fully appreciate not only what it is and what it tastes like, but that backstory as well. I think that is the great work that you're doing, right? So that people can understand and be able to get it and pay a premium for it, right? Because there's a lot of the higher purpose built into it. We're going to take a break, and hopefully, Lou, you can hold on for just a couple minutes. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the events when you get done vacationing down there in the frigid 62 degree weather. You're going to come back, and the work's going to continue. We're going to talk about that, some things coming up, and some ways people can get involved and support it as well. So keep it here. We're going to talk with Lou Bank live from Oaxaca. When we come back, it's Dane on the 720 WGN. There you go, 720 WGN live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio high atop Chicago. We can see pretty far, cannot see all the way to Oaxaca, where Lou Bank is on the line with us. Beth Peterson in studio as well. And Beth and I were talking off the air, and she had mentioned some of the things. Is like, once you get a chance to fully understand, appreciate, and taste what it is that you have in some of those ways and some of the different spirits that you're helping to present at some of the events through Sacred. Once you do that, you can never imagine, I don't want to say defiling them, but
right,
but putting them in a margarita or something like that. Because one time...
They should be sipped, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Right, Lou?
Yeah, yes. The beautiful spirits are made to be sipped, and I don't think you can fully appreciate the depth of flavor of them once you put it in a cocktail. But having said that, Americans tend to drink cocktails. We don't tend to drink spirits neat. And so if the way you come to mezcal is through the cocktail, hey, that's great. I get it. The way you drink mezcal is only ever in a cocktail, I get that as well. I just think there's some percentage of the public that is going to be blown away. People who drink fine wines are going to be blown away when they start drinking these spirits neat.
Well, I mean, people are interested in drinking whiskey and bourbon neat and other cocktails, vodka. I like vodka neat sometimes.
Vodka neat? Who's vodka? Well, are you drinking neat?
Well, I don't know. I like it with a little bit of ice.
No, but I'm gonna shout out to my friends at CH Distilling in Chicago.
Oh, yes, I love CH.
I used to make fun of vodka, like, who would drink vodka neat? And then I tasted their vodka.
It's delicious.
I got
a little bit for Christmas this year. Someone gave me a bottle.
Yeah.
Lucky me.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with that. And you're seeing a little bit of that. I think at some of the Christmas, parties and celebrations, I saw a little bit of that whole, which seems kind of strange, right? Because vodka is that blank canvas that a lot of, mixologists and bartenders love to be able to blend with things. So to have some flavors in there that are worth drinking neat is something I think special. But when it comes to the mezcal, I mean, and Beth, you brought up sort of the whiskey and the bourbon situation, and all those are wonderful, but I contend there's so much more going on in the mezcal where it's kind of like a little adventure, right? Just the flavors, and if you can describe for the listeners, Lou, the kind of things that they're going to taste when they try that mezcal.
So what I tend to tell people is I rarely describe flavors. Like, there's a varietal of agave. So these spirits are all made from agave. And there are 200 to 300 kinds of agave. And about 35 to 55 of them are commonly used to make agave spirits. And there's a varietal called Tempestate that takes somewhere between 12 and 40 years to reach maturity. And that one, when almost every time I taste it, I taste pollen and black pepper.
Mm.
But aside, and there are some other varietals that taste like roasted peanuts to me. But aside from that, I tend to taste colors in these spirits. I'll get different shades of green, yellow, red, orange when I taste them. And then there's a minerality to it as well that I think is a result of the spring waters that they use in the fermentation process.
Well, that's the other part of this. You have explained the processes and like you were saying, that these different families, these different mescaleros, right? That's what they're called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have various different processes and different ways that they filter, things that they filter through. And can you talk about that a little bit? It's so interesting to me.
Yeah, so the key to all of these things I'm going to explain is that there's no real modern technology used in terms of measuring what's going on. Literally, these men and women are using their five senses, their smell, the touch, the taste, their hearing, their watching, to see when things are done. So everything is approximated, which means it's really rare that you're going to get two spirits that taste exactly alike. There's always variation in there. So, you know, as we talk about like the 2012 Rojas, different than the 2013 Roja, same thing with a batch of Araucano from 1 year to the next, from one producer to the next. And what they're going to do is they're going to roast these agave in a stone-lined earthen oven buried underground for anywhere from 3 to 7 days. They're milling using a couple different techniques. Sometimes you're milling by hand using wooden mallets. Sometimes it's a stone wheel that's pulled by a horse. Sometimes it's as simple as a wood chipper. And then you're fermenting that roasted milled agave open air, usually in a wooden barrel, sometimes in a bullskin or a hollowed out log. And then once that ferment, right, once those sugars have been converted to alcohol, you need to separate the water from that. So it's probably like 5% to 8% alcohol once the fermentation is done. So you want to move the water away from the alcohol. You do that by heating it up in a still. So the boiling point of alcohol is 173 degrees. Boiling point of water is 212. So they're using wood-fired clay, copper, sometimes steel stills to get that temperature above 173 but below 212.
Mm.
Which, you know, trying to do that without a thermometer, you're using your hands to figure out when, right? It's crazy.
Wow.
Beautiful and it's crazy.
When you bring up the fact that, you know, the generations that they've been doing it for the longest time, that's the kind of stuff, there's no substitute for experience. When you talk about being able to share the messaging and some of the response and it kind of being, you know, over what it is that you thought would happen as far as some of the progress. And I want you to talk a little bit about it. You know, the major industry event where people are out there to try new things, taste new things, to recognize kind of accomplishment, maybe even greatness in the industry, is Tales of the Cocktail. Talk a little bit about that. And you guys were at Sacred, were recognized for some of the things that you're doing.
Yeah, it was really humbling. You know, my world is the nonprofit world. And so Tales of the Cocktail is this trade show for bartenders where you get 20,000 bartenders in New Orleans in July, which cannot possibly be a recipe for disaster.
It is.
I've been there twice. It's a great time. It's a lot of fun.
But so I come in and I present on these spirits, and it's fun when I present to consumers. I get a lot of feedback, and people are asking questions and laughing during the presentation. And when I present to bartenders, the room is just dead silent, and it's scary. It's scary to me. And what I found out, what I realized at the end of the first time I did this, was they were all taking notes. At the end, we're drinking, and they're taking notes. They're so serious.
Yeah.
As an industry, they are so serious about their profession and wanting to know about the spirits. So it was really humbling. I had 40 people in this presentation that I gave. It was one of 80, I think, presentations over the week. And they voted my presentation best. And, like, I don't know how to make a cocktail. These people have skills beyond anything I have, and that they would regard what I had to say as important was just really, it was humbling.
Well, you know, you're calling us live, letting the listeners know from the driving force of Sacred Lubang, calling us live from Oaxaca, and we've got like a minute or two, maybe 3 minutes maybe, left before, and we want to hear is you come back, you will return, and much like MacArthur,
we'll
right?
See.
And then the work will continue, and the events will continue, and so talk a little bit about some things coming up in the near future and ways people can get involved, get more of that information, and get out and see you.
Sure. So the first thing I recommend people do is go into our website, sacredagave.org, and signing up for the mailing list. So we have events. We tend to have like 1 to 2 events every month, but in October and November, there was a 14-day period during which we hosted 11 events. So I was exhausted. I literally haven't done any planning for early 2019, but I'm sure in February we'll end up with an event. I'm headed back down here to Chiapas with the Dark Matter Coffee people to do a chocolate thing a little later in January, and then to Durango with a bunch of bartenders to show them how they make spirits in that state. But come February, there will be a tasting event somewhere in Chicago, and if people sign up to the mailing list, I'll get them that information. But then the next thing they can look forward to is in March, at the end of March, I think it's the 21st or the 29th, I'm taking a group down to Oaxaca here for a tour of mescaleros and just the agave culture. So if you're interested in 9 nights in Oaxaca, there you go.
Sounds like fun.
The website, Lou, too?
sacredagave.org.
And as we let you go, what's your New Year's resolution? Is it just keep doing more of what it is that you're doing? Is it to kind of branch out and do anything? Is it maybe just to maybe get healthier? Or is it to declutter your life? Are there any normal resolutions for a Lubang?
My resolution for the new year is to get up more frequently at 2 a.m. to talk to my friends, Beth and Dan.
That's great.
Here he is. He's not just talking the talk. I mean, he is, yes, of course, but he's also walking the walk. All right. We'll let you get back to doing what you're doing. Our best to Connie, and enjoy the rest of your vacation and all the work you're doing. And thanks, Lou, for jumping on.
Thanks, guys. Let's have a drink when I get back.
I love it.
All right. We will.
Bye, Lou.
We will do that. Right now, though, it is, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the dessert side for tailgating. We're going to get, hopefully, maybe we'll talk some of the bear situation. I know a little bit later on in that next half hour, we are going to be talking about, we'll have Carrie Nowbedian on. We're going to have Sean Gale, so keep it here.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high atop Chicagoland, and see a lot of tailgates. People are enjoying their college football, getting ready for NFL action. On the line with us, we're honored to have one of our favorite food personalities, one of the stars of the hit show The Kitchen, weekends on the Food Network. She is an inventor, you know, like Thomas Edison and, you know, Alexander Graham Bell, light bulb, the cure for polio. I'm telling you, if there was a tailgate division for the Nobel Peace Prize, she would be winning it, because she is bringing people together all around the country in the name of both food and fun. The one and only Sunny Anderson, welcome to WGN.
Dane, wow. Thank you so much.
So here's the thing, and I mean every bit of it as far as the inventing side. There are so many things out there, whether it's scotch tape or a bed liner for a pickup truck. There's things that if somebody didn't invent them, they wouldn't exist. And, you know, the snack stadiums, we see them on television. You know, see them on all the shows. People make them, but they're not real, right? It just kind of set the stage.
Right.
Now you can have one of your very own.
Yeah, like you said, like, you know, I hate to say they're not real because people put real effort to them. That was my problem. It's like, you know, what if you don't have the effort, the skill, or the time? Because some of these snack stadiums are gargantuan. Some of them use, you know, cardboard, aluminum foil. It's just like, okay, first, you make it, you use it. It's usually done after one use. And, you know, here I was tailgating, and I wanted to have a snack stadium too, but I'm lazy. And I tell people, you know, that's the first thing I usually tell people. That's why I cook. I'm lazy, I'm impatient, and I'm cheap, you know, so I like to, you know, cook for myself because, you know, I don't want to get dressed and go out, and I'm impatient. I don't want to wait through the chips and the salsa or the bread stage. I want to get the real meal, you know, immediately, and I'm cheap. You know, it's a lot less expensive to do it on your own. So that was my goal with the Infladium, was to create something for the lazy, impatient people like me, you know, that wanted to save money. So I made sure it was inexpensive. And it's a inflatable snack stadium that you just blow up like you would an inner tube. And it has inserts for the snacks and the food. It looks like a football stadium. It instantly makes your party look like a party without doing anything. And I'm excited. I wanted one. And like you said, like, you know, it's, I'm not reinventing the wheel or anything. It's not Edison, but I definitely feel proud of it because it's something that wasn't out there for purchase for the masses, and now it's available for everyone.
Yeah, we're going to have pictures up and links up at WGNRadio.com as well for it, too. And here's the other part of it, and you mentioned some of the considerations out there for it. Mm-hmm. You make it so that it's the kind of thing that is reusable. All of those other things that mm-hmm. you would make for whatever party, you know, they're just, it's one time, right? And it's already ruined. Yeah. This is something you can store, you can blow up, you can wash, you can reuse, and it's price considerate, right? Was that part of the thought process? Is you wanted, it's cool to make great things, but people have to be able to afford them.
Totally. You know, so the cool thing is that I was actually tailgating with the people that run Party City for years. And so as I was developing the idea in my mind, I had no idea that they would be the perfect partner, but they manufacture about 85% of the stuff that's on their shelves. And so because of that, they're able to do things in a way that they don't have to pay out to other companies. They manufacture themselves. So things are less expensive. So I knew when I decided to pitch to companies, they would be one of the first that I went to. And luckily, they saw my goal and they understood my intent was not to gouge and go out here and make money. It's just like, hey, this is a good idea. Why is it not out there? You know, I've searched online and people are looking for it. There are a million pages of how to make one. But where's the one page where you can buy it? You know what I mean? Right. And there were some expensive ones out there, you know, where someone, you know, crafty on eBay, which I love eBay, they'll build one for you. But those were like gargantuan, expensive, and single use. So, again, I like the idea of the inflatium. You can wipe it off. You can use it again. We have inserts that you can buy for it. I've got some new stuff coming, Dane. I've got some new stuff coming.
Here's the thing about it, too. It's one thing to have a product out there, like, you know, like Tupperware, right? You can go get it. You can use it. You mm-hmm. kind of know what you're supposed to do with it. But you're able to kind of capitalize on, you know, your knowledge base, you know, just the kind of stuff that you do. And you can add in, you know, maybe some suggestions, some recipes. You've got some books. So now there's some value adds built into the inflatium.
Yeah, so this, you know, the inflatium actually comes with a recipe book of game day ideas and recipes. And for the season, I put together a new cookbook for it that has more than 20 recipes that are all under 5 ingredients that are for game day. So dips and slow cooker recipes for chili with just 5 ingredients, you know, something quick and easy to put together so you can get to watching the game. That's the other thing. Like, you know, I do so many segments talking about like how to set up for a party and stuff like that. It's always like lay these plates out, put the sticky notes on the plates so you know what goes in what plate. And it's like you're running around the house finding all these platters just for a cool football party. It shouldn't be that messy and fussy.
Parties are tough, right? You got the streamers. You got to figure out what to do with with the balloon animal guy. Then you've got like
I just want to know where the drinks are, where the trash can is, you know, where the food is, you know, so I can keep my place clean or my friend's place clean or whatever. But yeah, I just wanted to make parties easier for the party thrower and the party goer. And so I've got some new things coming out because Inflatium went so well. And I can't, that's the scariest thing, Dane, is like, you can have an idea, but you don't know if it's going to work. And you can want something, but you don't know if people just like you are going to want it. And we did so well last year that I was able to do more. And that's really the goal. If you're a creative, it's like you want to cook, you want to cook more. You want to draw, you want to draw more. You want to create, you want to create more. And so to be able to add more products to the line this year, it's like, I can't believe it, man. I'm just really, really happy and excited and proud to do the work.
And don't be fooled by imposters too, right? You need the genuine article. You need the Inflatium by Sonny Anderson. Now, here's the thing too, and part of it, and we had a lot of listeners were texting in. So you've got the device, you've got the, you know, the place to put all the stuff, and it looks great and it works great. It works with your lifestyle, your budget, all that kind of stuff. But what for you personally, a person that's been out there tailgating, enjoying football and the food side of football for so many years, before we let you go, a couple of Sonny's favorites. Like what do you like to eat? What do you want to make sure you have when you're doing the tailgate?
Well, I think the Texas in me always needs the queso dip. And the queso dip can be as simple as a block of processed cheese and a jar of salsa in a slow cooker. That right there is just so satisfying with some tortilla chips, I can't tell you. You can get fancy with it and take a couple of links of hot sausage and saute it down, cook it, and then add all that stuff. So you've got like a meaty queso dip. I love doing that. I also am just a... I'm kind of plain. I love just like a hot dog, you know, so a hot dog station. And that's perfect for the Infladium because you can like grill or boil the hot dogs and have the buns and then fill the Infladium with all the toppings. And for hot dogs, like it can be crazy. Like I remember the first time I came to Chicago, I had a hot dog with chopped tomatoes on it. And I thought, oh yeah, why not? My mouth will make the ketchup. You know, you can put like, you know, lettuce and chips and, you know, that Deglo green relish that you guys love there and all of the other regional toppings, chili and everything inside the Infladium and have a bar. That's another thing I like for a tailgate is to come up and see the ability to pile on, you know. So if it's, you know, the chips and then you have the queso, then it's like, okay, where are the pickled jalapenos? Where's the cilantro? Where's everything else? I'm that kind of an eater for tailgate. I like to pile it on.
Sounds great. People are going to be doing that. I encourage everybody to get out to the Party City.
Yeah, we'll bear down.
They're going to do it. All right, Sonny, we're going to let you get back to doing what you're doing. Thanks so much for jumping on and sharing the Infladium. Give the information out so people can enjoy you, not only on the product side, but also on the TV side with the kitchen and catch up with your adventures on social media.
Yeah, you can catch the Infladium exclusively at Party City online at all Party City locations in the U.S. and Canada. The kitchen is on Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock on Food Network. And I just found out Cooking for Real just started airing on OWN Sundays starting at 2 o'clock. So for anyone that wants to see the beginnings of me cooking and sharing my family recipes on Food Network, it's now on OWN. I'm just a happy girl. Proud to be a veteran, working hard, and just thankful for anyone that supports me because, as we all know, as we get out in this world every single day, it's a struggle just to figure out, you know, what it is and what we're doing and how to get it done and how to continue to be happy and stuff. So I'm a happy girl, and I'm really appreciative of this life, man. It's pretty cool.
You are
having
happy,
fun, Dane.
And you can see that, and obviously you're making so many people happy with all the things that you do. So thanks for what you do. Bless you. And we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, Dane, thank you so much.
WGN. Hi, atop the Allstate, Chicagoland here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Dane here with you until 5 a.m., along with Beth Peterson, riding shotgun. She is the author of the Tailgate Cookbook, and Tailgate is one of the themes that we are going to be kind of in and out of throughout the course of the program today. And I know the last time that we were doing, before we talked to Lou, before we talked to Sonny, we were getting into some of the dessert sides on the sweet side of the tailgate world. And why did you think that that was very important to put into the book? Also, because, too, before you get to that, is that we are going to have, and remember, earlier on the program we mentioned, we're going to have two tickets to give away for the Winter Classic, the Chicago Blackhawks versus the Bruins at Notre Dame Stadium on New Year's Day.
Super cool.
I think a little bit after 3 o'clock, you know, we're all going to powwow collectively and Dan Long, and we're going to figure out a way to, how to give them away, right? So stay tuned.
Something fun
for that, and we're also going to throw in one of the tailgate cookbooks
For sure. I've got a couple of them to give away.
Who said you can't tailgate at you know, I'm sure there's a lot of tailgate that happens near and around Notre Dame Stadium over there, but you could tailgate at a hockey game.
For sure.
Do people
absolutely
do that? Dan, have you ever heard, do people talk about tailgating for a Blackhawk game?
I don't think you can in the United Center parking lots.
I think that they encourage you to go in and tailgate by eating and paying for the food there at the United Center. That's what I'm thinking. Yes.
And Beth, has there ever been a concession stand tailgate cookbook being written?
Like
maybe you get the items, you head back to that high top.
Maybe. And then you can mix things together. Nope. I don't know. But I can tell you that for, I think it was the Stanley Cup. Yes, it was when the Stanley Cup was won here in Chicago. I did a segment on on one of the stations here for the Stanley Cup, and I had some homemade ice cream involved in the situation.
Okay.
It was pretty fun. Yeah. So
this will be your opportunity. So you get these tickets, and you can get down there and enjoy New Year's Day. You can see the Winter Classic, see that great hockey game. You got the Blackhawks Original Six versus the Bruins. And then you can tailgate. So let's talk on the dessert side. What do people have? Ice cream? That's pretty sweet.
Ice cream's pretty good. You know, in the book, I've got a friend of mine. His name is Jerry James Stone, and he is a vlogger. He's really popular on YouTube. And
I think of him as eccentric.
You know Jerry,
yeah,
right?
I know him
before. He is eccentric, and he is really fun on YouTube, and he's got like a million plus followers. And he is a vegetarian vegan guy, and I actually have some vegetarian vegan dishes in the Tailgate Cookbook because, you know,
was there any pushback from, let's say, the publisher, say like, hey, this is not the community, right?
This is you know what, there's never been a better time to be a vegan or a vegetarian. There's so many great options and amazing recipes. It's really kind of an elevated game right now for vegan and vegetarian. And so we've got like a whole nacho thing in there made with cashew butter. I mean, it's really some really cool recipes in there, and his is an avocado pop. So we've incorporated, you know, avocados, guacamole, so big at the tailgate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This is an ice pop that has avocado in it. It's green, it's really cute, and it's easy to make, and a really fun dish to bring out there for one of the hot weather tailgates.
Now,
right?
Jerry James Stone is one of the guys also, too, is he's one of the longtime proponents of the beet.
You know, he loves the beet.
He loves beets.
Yeah.
He makes a beet pop, doesn't he?
He does make a beet pop. This is kind of a sad situation for me. I can't eat beets.
Why is that sad? That seems like as a kid growing up, that would be
pretty.
Get out of jail free card.
Right.
Like, hey, I'm allergic to Brussels sprouts.
I never passed by that like kid thing with the beets. I can't do them. But they're so pretty, and they're in so many salads now, and there's a lot of recipes being made with them. And I, every time I'm like, oh, that's a beet. I can't eat that. So no beets for me.
So wait a minute. So do you just have a childhood aversion to the beet?
It's a whole aversion to it. There's something about it. You know certain people can't have
like
cilantro?
Oh, okay.
I can't stomach the beet for some reason. It's almost like I can't do it. And I know everyone loves them. Oh, I'm like,
that's so weird.
I feel like I'm losing out.
312-981-7200. You can text in. Is there a food out there? And maybe this you'll build into your resolution for 2019 that you want to get closer to. Maybe maybe extend the taste bud olive branch towards the beet. If you've got something that you can't eat and why, you can share it with us. We'll definitely share those as well. So when it comes to resolutions, and we're going to get into some of those for 2019, on the vegetarian side, is it maybe people want to, for me personally, I will add that into mine, is that I would like not to become a vegetarian. That's silly. But I would want.
Well, how would you handle the barbecue situation?
Right. That's just not, it's not possible. But I would say I would like to eat more vegetables because I will tell you.
You should.
I like vegetables, and you know, if they're on the plate or if they're part of something at a restaurant, I will eat them. If you know, if the family makes them, I will eat them. Yes. And I'll happily eat them. But I would never like knowingly purchase and prepare a vegetable. And I know that sounds crazy.
You sound like so many people that I know. There are a lot of people like you out there that really, you know, gravitate towards the vegetables.
If it's a barbecue situation, I will go coleslaw. I'll get a coleslaw.
Coleslaw's good for you.
And I'm sure even more than technically, I'm thinking that those are definitely
cabbage
vegetables.
Is great for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's kind of as far as I go. Other than that, I just really won't.
You won't do the veggies. You know, a grilled veggie, a roasted veggie. I mean, they're delicious. A raw veggie, you know, depending on the raw veggie. Delicious. And so, like, really, you know, we should all have more of the veggies in our lives.
And it doesn't have to necessarily be on the food side, because we can talk a little bit about some of those. And we've got some, you know, primers to the pump here. But Beth, give some thought, you know, as far as, because we're going to talk into some of the most common resolutions for New Year's, and here's some of the ones that what would you say if you had to pick one or two? I mean,
I would
some
say
of them
get
obvious.
In shape. Most people are probably like right about now. If you watch any TV, you know, the commercials are all about losing weight and weight loss and stuff like that. So I would say like getting in shape, losing weight would probably be number one on
one and two. Get more exercise and Eat Healthier. They're both there interchangeable, one and two, but identical as far as the amount of people. And then one of the other ones is save some money, save more money.
Yep.
I would say just maybe make more money.
Make more, save more.
Right, yes. Exactly. And then one of those, focus on self-care, you know, get more sleep, you know, just kind of be, I think that would kind of fit into the more healthy.
Yeah,
you know,
just overall be more healthy.
Yeah, read more. Someone wants to read more.
That's great.
That's one of the things. And I could see that. Make some new friends. You know, there's certainly a lot of platforms out there where you can make some friends.
You get to the end of the year and you realize you didn't get invited to any of those Christmas parties, maybe, or...
They know I don't have time, so that's why I didn't. No, I'm just kidding. Learn a new skill. That is another one that is out there. Like, what would there be?
What skill is there anything would you there want be? To woodworking?
I use, and you've met Oliver before, my brother-in-law, he took up knitting. I'm not
really?
Sure...
Really?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's... And he's great at it.
Wow.
Did
you get a knitted sweater for Christmas?
I think once you have someone that actually makes the things, you really appreciate just how much work goes into. I don't know that I've earned a sweater. Maybe a mitten, maybe one mitten. It takes a long time.
And they can be complicated, right? I have some knitted afghans that people have made, handmade, and I cherish them. It's wonderful.
One of the other ones that's in there is get a new job, you know, so get out there, maybe even if it's just get a better job within your other job, you know, maybe work towards that promotion that you want, take up a new hobby. I think that's still, what's the difference in your
skill,
opinion?
Hobby, skill, yeah. Like, skill would be like,
maybe go back for computer school or something. Okay.
Yeah, maybe. Or like something really like woodworking to me seems like a complicated skill that you would like. Really have to like, where would that be a hobby? I guess it could be both.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on what you want to do with it.
Maybe cook, like spend more time in the kitchen, learning how to do all the techniques and stuff.
That sounds like a hobby, unless it's a skill.
It's a skill. It's a life skill for sure.
Unless you want to go get a job doing some of those things. But so what are yours? We've gone through some of the basic
ones. I'm very, very typical right now because the last 6 months or so, you know, Dane, you know, I like the exercise. I like to work out. I like to be fit. I like to do all those things and eat healthy. And I fell off the way. I fell off of the whole thing so hard about 6 months ago. And so the beginning of the year this year, it's all getting back to that for me. So that's my resolution, is getting back to my good, healthy ways.
Because you usually, and you've been a proponent oftentimes, I'm, you know, not very healthy at a lot of the things
I've
that
had
I do.
A big year this year, so
I say, like, drink the green, you know, you've got the green drink.
Drinks, right. And here I am drinking coffee instead of the green drinks. Yeah, I'm big time into I have been for many, many years big time into the green drinks, and I sort of fell off of it.
Wow,
darn it.
Coffee's not bad for you.
I love the coffee.
Tons of those, you know, big studies and everything talking about how coffee's good for you. 312-981-7200. Your resolution, something you'd like to share, and part of it, I think, that makes it real, that you feel sort of obligated to follow through on it, is letting people know, and you can do that with us here on the show. And then also, what are things that you can't eat? Beth, of course, she's got this aversion to beets.
We've got
Edwin online. Edwin, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome. How are you?
I'm okay. And so what is, are you going to share maybe a certain flavor or some kind of food that you can't eat that you've got an aversion to, or are you going to share one of your resolutions?
Yes, sir. One that I don't want to eat. And that is, why do sweet potatoes get alterated with cinnamon and sugar, and why can't we eat them just like a potato?
Edwin, that's an excellent question, because we had, over the last couple of days, a number of sweet potatoes, and the best thing about them is the marshmallows that are melted on the top.
Yes.
I know.
They're sweet.
And I can't eat them.
No, why?
Because I don't want to eat marshmallows and sugar and cinnamon.
Yeah.
I just want a sweet potato.
I think you can, though. Sweet potatoes, I love sweet potato French fries. They're delicious. And, you know, a lot of times they're baked.
And chips.
Or you could eat them just like a regular baked potato. I've had them, you know, with the sour cream and everything on them.
So
butter.
Maybe
I don't know if it makes it much healthier, but
just brave.
Delicious.
Yeah, just kind of like go in there and you can get them at the grocery store. Just heat them up and just, I guess, bite one, I guess, would be the way to do it. And I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you have a resolution as far as kind of kicking it off for the listeners? listeners that you would say, like, hey, something that maybe you're looking forward to either doing, maybe trying something new, learning something, maybe adjusting something in 2019?
I want to commit to eating my old commitment, which is eating whole plant foods. And as far as the sweet potatoes, I just mentioned this because I'm not referring to me making them. I'm referring to wherever you go.
Oh, yeah.
And you're thinking, yeah, there's a sweet potato. And then it's glazed with all this stuff. Yeah. And you say, oh, no.
It's fried. It's got stuff all over it. I think if you see sweet potato and you want to have one, you just ask them, just bake it for me or just, you know.
Well, Edwin, and I think you're bringing it up here. Like, why do we need that extra stuff? So I appreciate it. Thanks for listening, Edwin. And good luck with everything and good luck on 2019.
Hey, it's going to be a good year. I appreciate the show, and you guys have all of God's blessings.
All right.
Thanks, Edwin.
You know what? This is it, too, is there are some foods that are just more processed than others.
Yeah.
You know, I think potatoes in general, you know, because even...
They get coated.
Even when you feel like, let's say you're going to have a baked potato, and I think in its initial form, it's kind of a, you know, dirty looking potato. You wash it off and then you heat it up. And then what do? You put, at least I do, you know, butter sour cream, some
so
chives
good.
On it, maybe some bacon, like
salt,
bits,
pepper,
maybe even some
thing.
Cheese.
Oh, yeah. Right? Loaded. You're talking loaded baked potato.
Yeah, it's not a.
But potatoes, just like without all of that, are pretty good for you. They have a lot of good properties without all of the big fatty things on top of them.
Oh, my gosh.
But I think maybe that's
the next book. Is the baked potato book.
There is a whole potato section.
And the healthy tailgate. Is there a healthy tailgate book?
I don't know if there's like full-on healthy tailgate book. Maybe. But I definitely have some healthy recipes in the tailgate cookbook.
All right. We'll collaborate
on those. Tasty and healthy.
When we come back from the news, I think we may have, I'm not exactly positive, we may have Sean Gale join us to talk a little bit about Taste of the NFL and tailgate and maybe his thoughts on maybe some healthy and not healthy things he could build into it. Maybe we'll get a resolution out of him as well.
Hi, this is Sean Gale. You're on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high atop Chicago, which is not the most exciting place, obviously, in the city. But on the line with us, honored to have a guy who played 12 seasons in the NFL and 11 as a Pro Bowl safety for the mighty Chicago Bears and part of the mightiest Bears team of all time, maybe the mightiest in all of the NFL, and reached immortality as part of the shuffling crew for the Super Bowl shuffle. The one and only number 23, Sean Gale, welcome to WGN.
It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. I've got to share a little bit of history. I'm sure you won't remember any of it, but you were actually, I think, my first sort of, you know, sports celebrity interview that I had ever done. It was something related to Sports Channel and down at Grant Park, and Steve Cashel was there. I actually got a chance to, this was, you know, beyond his playing days, but Bob Avellini was also there. It might have been 1997, and you were absolutely awesome. So thank you for doing that so many years ago. I didn't get a chance to thank you till now.
Well, Dane, thank you for remembering. You got a pretty good memory. I'm sure it serves you well.
You know, when you think about this and so many, you know, great experiences that you had with the Bears with the last handful of years, the best thing about a Bears game was maybe the tailgate, right? Maybe the food and some of the ways you could enjoy it on the food side. And for you, you know, personally, as, you know, you were playing with the Bears, and of course, Ohio State known for their great fan base on the college football side, so many great tailgates. So now that you're past the playing days and getting an opportunity to kind of sit back, enjoy some of the accoutrements on the food side of football, what is it? What does a Sean Gale do when he's relaxing, watching a game? What do you have?
Well, I have to say it's a time of day where it's a type of food that you want to be able to enjoy with one hand because you might have a beer in the other hand. I mean, I'm just going to tell you like it is. A lot of players enjoy watching the game and enjoy a nice snack. So for us, you know, that's not really part of the ritual we grew up with because we were usually playing.
Right.
But now that we're out of the game and have an opportunity to mingle with the fans and spend time watching, you know, it's nothing like a nice burger, chips, some fries, all the different type of recipes that have been passed down through generations of of families that have watched a particular team. To me, that's always been fascinating. But it's really something because the menu can be so diversified. Now, I've had the opportunity to spend some time at events in different areas, and there's no really set menu that everyone deviates from. It's just something that someone likes and enjoys cooking, and they make it their signature dish. And so you go from one tent to the next, and you can pretty much find any type of food that you like.
Well, it comes to the grilling side. You certainly see a lot of grilling and the barbecue side and things happening in a parking lot or around, let's say, Soldier Field. But you go around the country, people, and you mentioned it, people kind of make it their own, right? You know, whatever part of the country it is, you know, there'll be, you know, like a jambalaya or crab boil or lobsters or brisket down in Texas or out in California. Maybe you have maybe some more sensible options, but people enjoy doing it, and they enjoy kind of making it their own, like you said. And of course, you do have to have the beverage, preferably cold, in one hand as well when you're doing it. Now, do you enjoy, of course, you had the best seat in the house right there on the field, but do you enjoy going to the games as much? Because a lot of people that we talk to, you know, not everybody has the greatest seats, and the way that they do it with television now, watching a game at home can be pretty great.
I don't spend much time at the stadiums. I can say that. I do enjoy watching a game from time to time. In fact, it's pretty much my job. I work for one of the networks, so I cover the NFL, so I spend a lot of time watching games. But every once in a while, I get a chance to go to an event and meet the fans pregame and have a chance to sample some of the dishes, and that's always exciting for me. In fact, that's why I'm so incredibly grateful that I've been able to be a part of the taste of the NFL.
It's a big thing. You think about all the food that happens in and around, and of course, the Super Bowl, the biggest celebration in football, probably in sports, you know, taste of the NFL is out there. And so let's talk a little bit about the Kick Hunger Challenge. This is an opportunity for everybody to get involved, right? You don't have to necessarily be out there with a Super Bowl ticket. You can get involved. You can support your team. You can support the food situation and relief organization that is in your area supporting your team. It's Greater Chicago Food Depository for us. But talk about how fans can get involved and support it, go along with you, and stop hunger.
The Taste of NFL's Kick Hunger Challenge, it really pits fans from all 32 NFL teams against each other. It's a friendly competition to help raise money for your favorite NFL team's local food bank. All the proceeds raised, it goes directly to benefit your community. And the Taste of NFL has done such a great time over the years. To date, they've raised upwards of $26 million wow. for food banks and non-profit organizations in all 32 NFL cities. It's really something special. And to be a part of that, you really feel the power of community, realizing that anything that we set our minds to do together, there's really no goal we can't reach. And, you know, there are people out there who just don't have the means to enjoy what we have. And if there's anything that we can do, it's to take a step forward and make a difference in some lives. And I've been very fortunate to be a part of this. And I really enjoy spending time with the organizers because you can really feel their passion. Their passion is a fuel for all of us.
Well, and we've got some great organizations that do incredible work all throughout the year. Greater Chicago Food Depository. KickHungerChallenge.com is the website for that. And it's does it help at all? You know, as a guy who's been a part of the greatest Bears team, certainly the greatest Bears defense, and you see the Bears, but they're giving people a lot of things to get excited about. Does it actually? And you said involved over the years, and your job is to watch football. Having the Bears do better, does it make the donations go a little faster as well?
It does, because when the team plays well, everyone's attention is on the team. It's amazing. It's just human nature. Winning makes everything easier, makes everyone happier. And I think it's such a great time right now for the Bear fans, because we've been close before to getting to the Super Bowl. And I don't want to jinx it like you mentioned, but, you know, we have to be realistic that when the team does well, everyone comes out, everyone enjoys it, expectations are high. But I believe in this team. This team seems to rise to the occasion. They have the right pieces in place. It's just a matter of staying healthy and continuing to improve.
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of the pieces in place. You look at the coaching staff and just, it's kind of like you plug in those right things and then things are hitting on all cylinders, and maybe they're not exactly, you know, where they need to be maybe this year, but I think this is a team that can accomplish great things. I know you agree. For those people that want to, we got kickhungerchallenge.com. We're going to have that up at WGNradio.com as well. And let the listeners know we're talking with Sean Gale. And Sean, is there anything as we let you go, if people, you know, listeners, fans want to follow you and your adventures social media wise, that you want to share?
I'm just one of the many people that are keeping tabs on the Bears, and I'm so hopeful that they'll continue to improve and win more and more games. And, you know, I'm looking at this upcoming game versus the Vikings. I know it's not going to be easy, but I'm a believer. And I think, as I mentioned, they're doing so well on defense. They're doing so well on offense. They have so many skilled athletes out there. I wish them the best, and I can't wait to see a result that would have me smiling going into the playoffs.
Yeah, it certainly makes it a lot of fun whenever you can kind of couple that fun, like you said. People get excited about the team. They're excited about things that are going on and excited to help as well. KickHungerChallenge.com. Like I said, we'll have it up. And John, we'll let you get back to doing what you're doing. Thanks so much for everything, for being involved in such a great cause, and, of course, for being such a great player and for jumping on the show today.
Thanks for having me. And again, look up the information, Pace the NFL. It's a great charity. There's a representative from every NFL team, and I'm fortunate enough to represent the Bears there. If you happen to be in Atlanta during the Super Bowl, you can grab a ticket. Come on by and see us. It's a great experience. So many wonderful dishes from all around the United States covering each NFL team. You'll meet a player, get an autograph, and have a great experience eating some fantastic tailgate food.
Yeah, the Super Bowl is always a great time and great food there, and you never know, maybe there'll be more than just you in relation to the Bears there as well. It could be maybe the Bears will be representing, and that's a great road trip, not too far, Atlanta, maybe about 10 hours. So thank you, Sean. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Nate. Take care.
So that's an opportunity to get down. I mean, yeah,
sounds like a come on, Bears, let's go.
You never know, right? Just for, again, best thing, just for the food. Exactly. Who cares about the game, the tailgate? Well, here's the opportunity to tailgate for the hockey side of things, and this isn't something you get to do on a regular basis. Dan had mentioned that at the United Center, it isn't something that is welcome. Beth said you could tailgate at the concession stand. What fun is that? But what you're going to need, though, because you're going to want to be able to tailgate, then get in there and see what is the Winter Classic, which is an amazing thing that the NHL does. And it takes two, a lot of times they're the original six teams, two great teams, great franchises with fan bases, and puts them in iconic stadium situations. This is no different, because now you're at Notre Dame Stadium, you know, with the, you know, touchdown Jesus.
Fantastic.
Becomes,
yeah,
hat trick Jesus, right? And you get in there and do it. And so here's the way to give away. We're going to be doing this over the course of the next, during this commercial break, and then we'll announce our winner when we come out of it. And Dan, so how are we going to give these tickets away for the listeners tonight?
Well, why don't we, let's start. We'll start with the third caller at 312-981-7200. If you can answer this little trivia tidbit question here. In Game 6 of the 2013 Stanley Cup Final between the Blackhawks and the Bruins, who you will be able to see at the Winter Classic if you win the tickets, is the infamous 17 seconds sequence at the end of the third period. Two goals in 17 seconds won the game for the Cup, won the game and the Cup for the Hawks. Give me the names of one of the two goal scorers.
312-981-7200. That's what you have to do. 312-981-7200. We'll take those calls throughout the course of this commercial break. We'll announce it on the other side. It's staying here, 720 WGN. That's right. 720 WGN, high atop Chicagoland in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane here with you until 5 a.m. Beth Peterson riding shotgun in this. And that song that you, yep, that Dan played, that's Maxwell's favorite song. It gets him pumped up,
it's
for all
so
of the,
much fun.
His potential victories on the...
And I'm crossing my fingers for everybody out there right now.
The sixth grade.
It's going to be...
We've got our winner. Dan has been manning this situation, and we have our winner on the line with us. Susan, welcome to WGN.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Susan. So here's the thing, and this is, I think it's, I don't want to say it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, but it certainly is a very, very cool opportunity to spend New Year's Day with the Blackhawks and the Bruins at Notre Dame Stadium outdoors playing hockey, maybe build in some tailgate, who knows. So do you have our our winning answer?
Yeah, Brian Bickle, Bix.
Dan, you're confirming, right, Dan? All right. So there you go.
And then Boland was the other one.
Wow. So it wasn't just a Patrick Kane answer, and this is a big congratulations for you, Susan. So congratulations. Thanks for listening. Now, you're in Kenosha. Just, I think,
yeah, I am.
That the mighty signal can get a little bit over the border. So who are you going to bring? You get two tickets. I'm assuming you'll...
My husband. Oh. We're both big fans, and our daughter is an alumni of Notre Dame, so there's a lot of reasons for us to go.
This is perfect.
Oh, wow.
I'm just so happy to hear the fairer sex on the other line winning the... this is great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so Susan, you've heard a lot of tailgate talk on the show tonight as you've been listening. What do you guys do for a situation, especially you mentioned your daughter went to Notre Dame? I don't know if you got a chance to experience any of the football side. Are you going to tailgate?
Yeah,
a little bit?
It's the best. Well, we'll probably find something and we'll just grab on, you know. We'll be tucked up with some good food and something good to drink, and of course, hopefully a win for the Blackhawks.
Well, congratulations. Thanks so much for listening. Do you want to leave us with your resolution? Obviously, your resolution is to start the year off with the Blackhawks at the Winter Classic, but do you have anything that you're planning that you want to share?
Yeah, sure. Not to eat so many sweets.
Right. Yeah, that's probably one for a lot of people, right? Right after the holiday.
Right.
I think you're starting out pretty good with a win, right? For you, this is a win. So starting out 2019, winning a prize, it's pretty cool.
All right, thanks.
It is.
Appreciate you listening.
Okay.
Dan will take care of it, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks so much. Happy New Year.
Wow. You know, Happy New Year to you, too. Wow. We get a chance to give away some pretty cool stuff here. And this is one of the cool, I mean, unless, you know, maybe a Caribbean vacation or something.
Yeah.
This is a pretty cool prize.
Very cool prize. It's like kind of a one-of-a-kind situation. Love it.
Yeah, it is. And so these are some pretty boring resolutions. I mean, more power to you, all the people that want to, you know, enjoy sweet potatoes a little bit more, I guess, right? And sweet potato farmers out there are going to be excited about that. Maybe a little less sweets, you know, the candy people.
Right.
They can't be happy.
No.
So I'm trying to think, on the New Year's resolution side, Beth, do you want to share one or two that you've got?
Well, like I said, I was saying earlier, for sure, it's definitely just to exercise more and eat better, which is typical probably of everybody right now. We're just coming off of, you know, like a lot of good holiday food. One of the big things is to just, it's kind of basic, it's kind of broad, but it's basically just to enjoy every single day. I mean, you know, life is short, time is precious, right? So, really trying to enjoy, you know, every day. Pick a little part of the day and just enjoy it, even if, you know, you're having kind of a tough one.
That's all right, get out there and appreciate it.
Try and just be grateful for every day.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Hey, Dan, do you have a New Year's resolution? You don't feel any pressure to think about this. We've got a few days before we have to get towards actually committing to any kind of thing. But is there something that you're thinking of?
Yeah, I'm tired of the same old stuff because, like we were just talking about, I do the same stuff every year anyway, and it's always I'm going to be more disciplined at the gym or try to be more organized and less clutter and stuff like that. So I got to think of something unique this year. I guess that's my resolution, is to have a better resolution.
That's a good one.
There you go.
Yeah, the resolution to get a better... Well, here's the thing. Sometimes you can be inspired a little because you can't think of everything
right on
your own. And sometimes, you know, some of the things, whether these are the list that's there or maybe, you know, from the listeners, 312-981-7200, you don't have to get online and share them in person by voice. You can text it in, you know, some of the things that you'd want to do. But I like the whole learn a new skill.
Yeah,
you know, learn to get a new hobby.
What would your skill, your new thing be? What hobby, skill?
I mean,
sailing?
No. Yeah, skydiving. I want to become a skydiver. No, I think I'm along the lines of Dan, and maybe I can kind of ramp it up and figure it out before the end of the program.
French macaroons. You want to learn how to make those? Those are tough to make.
I have no desire to make the macaroon. Maybe eat more macaroons.
You impress people.
Really?
Yeah. I like that you're going the opposite of everybody else that's saying, I'm going to back off the sweets. I'm going to back off of the cookies and the cakes. You're saying, I'm going to eat more French macaroons.
Learn to appreciate and consume more French macaroons. You say it's
that's
tough. And now think about this. Maybe in the circles that you travel in, that is an impressive thing. I just don't know. It's just a group of guys and me throwing out that, you know, I'm an accomplished French macaroon maker.
They'll appreciate when you give them one to eat because they're quite delicious if they're done correctly. But
certainly you want to get more. I want to get a little healthier for sure. Maybe a lot healthier. So there you've got that. And then on the skill side, I'm trying to think of something.
What do you got? Like,
I don't know. I don't want to maybe learn
to code
judo. No, I don't want to. I don't know. I don't want to code.
Maybe you already know how to code. I don't know. Okay.
I have no desire to code.
No coding.
No desire to make the macaroon. I'm trying to think of, you know, something that would be, see, that's where my brother-in-law, he's really great at that. And it's out of the blue stuff that you'd think, like, who did you run into that made, that knitted, you know, a hat or some kind of scarf
to craft
reindeer. And he said, I want to get good at that. And I think he wanted to do it as a stress reliever.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Because you think, well, we've talked a little bit about mezcal, I bet is also a stress reliever.
Right, drinking it.
Right, you don't have to.
Maybe not making it, but drinking it.
You don't have to spend hours learning how to make mittens. But he's done a great job with it. And so, I
like that. I think that's pretty cool. That's probably, you know, also helps your brain neurons. So you're doing something new paths going on.
Yeah, the mezcal probably not helping.
The mezcal, the brain. No.
I do like your idea of kind of taking a step back and sitting back and appreciating, you know, not just,
I know it
things,
probably sounded lame when I said it, maybe
really.
A little bit, because it seems cliche, but you know, so often we just kind of rush through life, you know what I mean? And don't really, like, you know, take a moment. So I like that you encourage.
Yeah. And you had asked off the air, and I think we could probably share it on the air, like with the kids and the Christmas and how did it go? And so how did it go on your end? Because you have one of the largest kids in the family. Is this Clyde's first Christmas?
It's Clyde's second Christmas.
Wow. So Clyde, for the listeners out there, yes. Beth, you know her and can appreciate her in all of her forms, and certainly the book side of it, but she is also a parent to one of the, I mean, I don't know what the record is, but it's one of the biggest German Shepherds, which is already a pretty decent sized breed.
Yeah, he's giant.
That I've ever seen. If it rears back like a grizzly, it's probably, he's got to be
intimidating.
Like 7 feet tall.
Yes, he's definitely almost as tall as me. He's a pretty big guy. And like, I got him when he was 7 months old. I rescued him and I thought he was a full grown dog. But no, he continued to grow and I think potentially might still be growing. He's just a big guy. I mean, he's definitely still needs to fill out a little bit, but he's so sweet, and I love him so much. He's awesome.
So maybe that's one of the things is maybe to do something on maybe rescue. We haven't had a dog in it's been, you know, maybe about a year and a half or something like that. We had a family dog for 14 years and lost.
It's just, Blue Bear.
Yeah, the Blue Bear. Yeah. And so now she's gone, and it's been hard. You know, the kids have really wanted to get another pet.
Yeah.
And
I encourage.
Like from right away they wanted to. And some people are like that. You know, I know, again, I'll mention Oliver, the brother-in-law, and certainly some other friends, that as soon as their, you know, their dog passes away.
Yeah.
It's almost within like a week they buy another version of that same dog.
Yeah, because they missed a dog.
Of course.
Right?
For me, it was super painful. I don't know that I could.
Yeah, it's like losing. I mean, they're like,
it's a family member.
They're
it absolutely 100% 100% is, and it was just such a traumatic thing to kind of go through that I'm not ready to kind of open myself up to that, because you know, inevitably, even if it is like 10 or 15 years down the road, it's the kind of thing that you got to deal with.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? You get so much joy from them for so long. And my contention is that a dog really with kids, it just warms up your house so much. I mean, I have pictures on my phone right now of the kids over the last few days just laying on the floor with him, hugging him, loving him. And it just brings them off of their phone, which we were talking about, you know, like the kids get the phones and all of the electronics and like all they're doing is silently looking at those. And so the dog sort of kind of changes that up a little bit in our house.
There's no boundaries with the dog. No respect there. So on the line with us, and of course, 312-981-7200, you can add in your resolutions that you're looking at, and they can be resolutions that are on the Get Healthy, Make Macaroon side, as Beth had suggested, or you can have something that has to do with tailgating in Kansas City. Of course, it's a barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Haven. We've got Doc in Kansas City. We're booming out there. Doc, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. I'm enjoying the show.
Okay.
I've got a resolution. I intend to buy Beth's book.
Oh, yay! That is the
now,
best resolution.
I don't know what I'll do after January 1st for another resolution, but
you're gonna. You know what? Here's what I think you should do. I think you should resolve to make all of the recipes in the book.
Oh, that's tough. Give yourself a whole year.
It took
for
me
that.
A whole year to do it. So,
and I've got a good suggestion for skill.
Yes.
I'm 65. I've been married 22 years in one house. But you can learn to landscape in such a way to attract wildlife to your yard. My yard is certified by the National Wildlife Federation as, as an official backyard habitat in that I offer food, water, cover, and place to raise young. So especially if you have kids, you can learn to bring birds, butterflies, caterpillars, hummingbirds, the whole gamut.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so who do you get in your backyard? Living, staying, visiting,
This is in Kansas City, right?
Well,
so there's no
weird. I'll have, it is the circle of life. I'll have these pigeons or doves come in, and they'll be eating seed off the ground, and a hawk will come by and just snack on one. And, you know, raccoons will come up and drink out of the pond. I have a pond in the back, pond in the front. They get a lot of hummingbirds. If you want to have butterflies, you have to have the food that the caterpillars eat, like parsley and milkweed, things like that.
I would like caterpillars.
Lots of cardinals, finches, blue jays. So, I would like to talk a little tailgating.
Awesome.
Since I'm from Kansas City, a lot of people think we're the best. I don't see how we, you know, there could be one best. But yeah. I would say most important point on tailgating, the list.
Oh, yeah.
And mine is two lists. It's the non-food items and the food items. You'd be surprised how many times we're tailgating and somebody will come up and go, hey, this seems kind of stupid, but could you loan us some charcoal, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, no, very, very good point.
The list is one of the most important parts, Doc, is you've got them. And think about this, because it's all hectic. And even if the list, you know, contains things like don't forget the tickets, you've got to remember all of that stuff. And so appreciate you kind of weighing in on this. And you've inspired me, because at some point later on in the program, that is one of my resolutions, is I've got to extricate. I've got a raccoon situation, Doc. We'll talk about it. Because apparently, like, inside my roof has become a certified habitat, right?
So you're already doing this.
so thank you.
You know, I did manage to keep an item on the list, but I was walking across the living room while I'm loading the van in the morning, and I set something down on the steps to go back into the kitchen, and then I put it in the van, and I'm out at Chiefs Stadium and setting everything up, starting to get the food, and I get a call from my wife, and she said, hey, there's a sack of meat here on the stairs in the living room. Was that something you planned on taking?
You didn't check that off your list. Visually see it, check it, and put it in, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly.
See, you got to have the list. You've got to set it. And I know that Kansas City Arrowhead Stadium is one of those top places. And we're late for news right now. But, Doc, I can't thank you enough for weighing in, sharing your resolution, and then inspiring some extra talk. So stay tuned, and we'll mention you and reference you a little bit later on in the program, too.
All righty. Thanks.
WGN High atop Chicagoland and the Allstate Skyline Studio. Dane here with you until 5 a.m. in four. Nick DiGilio, Beth Peterson riding shotgun. And congratulations to Doc, number one, right? Mm-hmm. Calling in from Kansas City, yeah. Sharing some things. And you know, and what a great resolution, right? To continue to be more of a friend with nature. Keep your list for the tailgate.
Oh, yes.
And of course, congratulations to him for the inspiration on getting the book, The Tailgate Cookbook.
He sounds pretty professional. Hopefully, you know, there'll be some good tips in there for
him. Yeah, and you've told him that he's obligated now once he gets book to make all of those things. 312-981-7200. As we close in on New Year's, people are starting to kind of line up, going to get ready, kind of prep their resolutions, mm-hmm. and we're doing a little bit of that. 312-981-7200. You can share yours as well. You can text them in. You can leave them with Dan. You can get on the air and talk about it as well. We're excited and happy to share that. And another big congratulations to Susan from Kenosha, who was our winner of a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks play the Boston Bruins in the Winter Classic at Notre Dame Stadium on New Year's Day. And leading up to the game, we're going to encourage her to do that. Be sure to visit the Blackhawks Hockey House, now open at 333 North Michigan Avenue, just south of the Blackhawks store, and filled with one-of-a-kind team exhibits, exclusive Winter Classic merchandise, and much more. There's an NHL Winter Classic Park, a free fan festival in Millennium Park. Enjoy games, food, and drinks. Meet and get autographs from the Blackhawks. And that is going on December 29th through the 31st. So
fun.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
You know what's not a lot of fun, Beth?
What?
having a raccoon. So Doc in Kansas City, he's out there trying to lure wildlife
right
into it, and I'm trying to repel wildlife. That's my. So it just shows how it takes a village, right?
Did you grow some things up in your attic and you know what I mean?
I put some special herbs up there. Yeah, a babbling brook up there. You know, that he could, you know,
parsley,
a bag of meat. You know, that maybe,
yeah, right.
You know, that maybe I should have brought to a tailgate.
You got to keep that in the backyard next time, mister.
Yeah. So, on the 312-981-7200, if anybody has any advice or thought process on the raccoon side, I know off the air, Beth, you had mentioned you got to have some professional help. Now, mm-hmm. I have extricated them over the years a couple times, different ones, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's more.
Hopefully, it's not the same one coming back.
Right. It's not.
I mean, you have a nice house, maybe. You never know.
It's not Jake, the local kind of. You know, hard scrabble, rough raccoon. So what they'll do is they'll get into raccoons are tough, and they're also, you know, they've got the opposing they got the hands,
yeah,
you know, so they can kind of break into your house, and so they can get in and get up into the ceiling. This is maybe about 10 years ago, one had gotten up into the ceiling, into the kids' room, I guess, and mm-hmm. Did not notice it, and it actually fell through the ceiling.
Oh my goodness.
And this was back when Blue.
That's not so. Oh yeah, Blue, what did Blue alive? Think about that?
And so Esther at the time, she, you know, grabbed all the kids. There was only two of them at the time, and she like ran into the bedroom. And so then there I was faced with this dilemma, like, what do I do with this raccoon? So the raccoon had fallen from, you know, whatever it was, 9 feet.
Yeah.
And smashed into a dresser. And
oh geez, for real. Yeah. I thought maybe just like cracked the ceiling a little bit and you could see it up there, but nope. No, for real, came in.
Nope.
Oh, boy.
It fell through. Well, the ceiling was... Here's
what I would do. Close the door and then just move.
There was no door. There was no door at that point. And so here I was trying to keep the dog away, because if the dog would have seen raccoon, and this was a pretty big one, they get pretty big. So I locked the dog out on the porch, and then I thought to myself, well, what to do, right? And this is, you know, you
get, like, get an apart, get a new house.
I grabbed a golf club, and then and I was thinking to myself, well, okay, I'm going to go, am I going to hit this raccoon with this golf club? Oh. I don't know how that would go. Probably not well, but I ended up being able to like open, and he was just brushing himself off. He didn't seem, you know, you think that an animal
a little stunned, maybe.
Would go like hide under a bed or something. Nope. He just got up and started, you know, kind of walking towards me. And
oh boy.
So we ended up figuring out a way to open the door and just kind of scoot him with the golf club. And
seriously.
Walked right out the front door.
He didn't like stand up and hiss at you or anything or do anything aggressive.
Remember, he just had quite a fall. So.
Right. He was a little stunned, maybe.
So you flash forward to now, and there's another one. You can tell they're big. And so I'm not sure exactly. I did a little bit of research on the internet, and mm-hmm. they don't like ammonia.
Okay.
And so you can get, you know, kind of an industrial sprayer and ammonia, and you can try to find out sort of where they're getting in there and put that stuff in there. It's supposed to make them want to leave.
Okay.
But other than that, they're tough. You know, they're the kind of thing that you don't want to mess with
them. You don't want to mess with them because, you know, you never know what diseases and all that kind of thing, right? They might bite you.
I was imagining, you know, sort of a crocodile, you know, Dundee situation, you know, where I'm actually wrestling the raccoon. That would be the danger. I didn't know about kind of disease.
I don't think you want to get too close.
Dan, have you ever had a raccoon situation? You ever had like maybe even a squirrel, you know, something that gets stuck in the house or?
No, I think mice are the most exotic wildlife we've had to deal with.
Okay.
I've had a lot of chipmunk issues, and they do some damage to like brick pavers, etc.
Okay.
And one actually ran into the front of my house. And ran around
a chipmunk. Like a
these things always seem to
like
have
Alvin
happened.
And the chipmunk?
Yeah, okay. The cute little things, right? They kind of they can be destructive. Opened the front door, chipmunk ran in, and these things always seem to happen to me when I was pregnant with the kids, right? And so I big and giant couldn't quite stop the chipmunk from coming in, came in, ran around my living room. I, of course, was screaming and trying to figure out how to get it out. It was probably quite a scene. And then it ran down the hallway and down into my basement. And I'm like, that was not a smart move, dude.
Because so
now,
did you find his little?
He was hiding out in there for a long time, and we found his little
self
in the back corner after a while. Yeah. not really, you know, didn't thrive down there in the basement, unfortunately.
312-981-7200. If you have any advice on the chipmunk removal, the squirrel removal, or maybe even the raccoon side of things, you'd appreciate it. That would be great. And so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Chef Carrie Nahabedi, and she is a James Beard Award winner, but also a big Bears fan and a sports fan and a tailgater. Right, she's going to give her thoughts on that on the fine dining side, so stay tuned. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. Dane, 720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high atop Chicago. And on the line with us is one of the country's great and certainly one of Chicago's great and celebrated chefs, James Beard. Here's the bell. It's time for dinner. The James Beard Award winner. And she is known for all of her magic at the beloved Michelin-starred Naha and for her acclaimed Brand D. Honored to have the one and only Chef Carrie Nahabedi. And Carrie, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dane. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, here's the thing. You know, as much acclaim as you have had and as much talent as focused as you obviously are on the food side, food specifically doesn't entirely define you. You are a huge Chicagoan. You are a huge Chicago fan. You are a huge sports fan. I love the stuff that you share on social media, you know, at the Cubs game and you through the years and you with your brother and all that kind of stuff. And now here you are bringing food, you know, and football together and, of course, Bear fans together for a great cause.
Well, we're happy to represent Chicago and the Chicago Bears every year at the Super Bowl for the Taste the NFL, which is a great event the night before the Super Bowl held in the Super Bowl city. And we're joined with Sean Gale from, of course, the 1985 Chicago Bears Super Bowl winners. And we raise money for food banks across America. So it's the Kick Hunger Challenge. So all the money that we raise goes to the Greater Chicago Food Depository and all their efforts to eradicate hunger here in northern Illinois, Cook County. And the Taste the NFL helps every food bank in every NFL city. So the profits from this great event, which is attended by over 3,000 people, it's an amazing event, go to help, as we call it, Kick Hunger.
It's kickhungerchallenge.org. We're going to have that up at WGNradio.com as well. So talk about kind of your relationship with sports. You know, how often have you had, like, important things happening at the restaurant and you're maybe checking out the scores or maybe you're missing some time, you know, at the places because you got to be there for the game?
Well, you know, I grew up in a very male-dominated family, and my father was a huge sports fan. All my cousins, my uncles, and even to a certain degree, my sisters. You know, we have great challenges between the Cubs and the White Sox. My cousin Michael, who I own the restaurants with, he and his mother are Cubs fans, and his father and his brother are Sox fans. So, it you know, you can imagine that rivalry. But growing up, it was always news and sports. It always seemed to be on television was news and sports. And if you're a Chicagoan, you have to be a sports fan. I mean, come on, we have some of the greatest teams in history in our city. So, you know, and the season's so short for the Bears, and everyone should be so revved up about the Bears this year.
Well, you know, the season is usually shorter than people, I think, are hoping it's going to be this year. And here's the thing, too, is of all the sports, and they are all great, there's nothing better than a, you know, a hot dog at the ballpark. There's nothing better than, you know, sitting down for a Blackhawks game with a nice cold beer, some things like that. But there isn't, I don't think, a sport that is matched up more with food and where food really kind of is front and center on this. And unfortunately, Carrie, you know, the Bears games, a lot of times over the years and the last recent years, like the best part of the game was the tailgate beforehand. Now we get a great game and we get a great tailgate. So for you, someone who can make absolutely anything, what are some of the ways that you celebrate or that you'd suggest listeners to be able to celebrate or incorporate into their either tailgate or maybe their home gate at home?
Well, I always say, whatever you make, make sure it's not something that's going to put you to sleep once you're in the stadium, despite how cold it could possibly be, or put you to sleep in your own house. So I suggest always very spicy, invigorating food. Like, you know, like I love a great chili. I love finger food, but it can also be healthy. I mean, you could make a great macaroni and baked lacquered bacon gratin and having arugula salad, and still the male in your family could still save face by saying he had salad at a tailgate. But I think you should always stick to the basics when it comes to tailgating, especially in Chicago, like a great hot dog, some brats, Italian sausage, Italian beef, like go make some great Italian beef, bring it in the pans. I mean, because you have to remember, you're eating before the game, but you also have to clean this all up and you have to, and then get into the stadium. So you don't want to turn it into a big banquet and forget that there's a game going on.
Well, okay. So, and that's the truth too, is it's got to be kind of portable getting in. You got to be able to bring it there. You got to be able to enjoy it while you're sort of mobile, right? You don't have a sit down situation typically at a tailgate. Then you got to be able to pack it up. So you're right there. Well, when it comes to Thrandy, let's talk a little bit about it. It's at 534 North Clark. And, you know, with all the success of Naha, all the experience and all that kind of worldwide kind of taking in what it is that you like, your vision for the food, and what you think will resonate with Chicagoans. Talk about, you know, what's going on there and what people are going to enjoy when they visit you.
Well, Brandy is, next year will be 6 years. So, we're, you know, some people think we're relatively new, but, you know, in the restaurant world, 5 years is a lifetime. So we're really happy to have made a great impact on the restaurant community. And Naha, 18 years. And, you know, as you know, in 2019, we'll be reopening the restaurant as well as another project. So we're very excited about that. But Brandy is a really approachable, great French cuisine. So it's country French, it's refined French, and it's regional French, all my vision, because that's how I started to cook, is I was classically trained. And so we have an amazing room that won a James Beard Award. My cousin Tom won it for best design. So aside from the fact that the food is great, you walk into a room that you never want to leave. So I think that's our biggest problem, that people never want to leave. And an amazing bar program. Of course, every great bar in the city has handcrafted cocktails, but just really tremendous wines by the glass, and an absinthe program, warm baked clafoutis, which is a warm, like a souffle cake with cherries and chocolate, and holdover soles, but you could still get a great gratin of French onion soup, a potato tartan, a great steak frites. So it's very approachable. It's a little bit of Europe right in the middle of Chicago.
Oh, that's great for the holidays. You mentioned it, that even within your own family, there is the rivalries, right, between the, you know, WGN has that long history with the Cubs, and now we're the flagship station for the Chicago White Sox, so we've got that. And, of course, you know, you've got the Bears and everything like that. Now, you think about the food side. There's always been that rivalry between New York and, let's say, Chicago, and now with the James Beard Awards here, you have a lot of people saying, you know, Chicago is America's great restaurant town, America's great food city.
You know, the thing about the Chicago-New York rivalry is this, is that you're never going to be able to compete with New York. It's one of the greatest cities in the world. So I would say, though, Chicago, Travel and Leisure, Bon Appetit, both voted it. Chicago is the greatest restaurant city in America for 2018. And our mayor, Rahm Emanuel, has brought more tourists here than ever before. So it's just an amazing city. It's a great community of chefs. And that's what people need to understand, is that these are chef-driven restaurants. This is the heart and soul of Chicago. Very, very diverse crowd. And no matter what, you're going to have a great meal, no matter where you go, whether you're coming to Brandy or you're going to any other restaurant, you're going to have a great time.
When you think about Chicago and where it is, Chicago may be with that great collection of chefs that you had talked about at Taste of the NFL happening down at the Super Bowl. I don't want to jinx it, but I, you know, everybody's kind of saying that maybe they've got a chance. You know, they've got such a great defense. The offense is playing well. As long as everybody stays healthy, it could happen, and you'll be front and center with them down in Atlanta, too. We're going to have links up at tasteofthenfl.com and kickhungerchallenge.com. And
we also so appreciate WGN. I was recently in the studio for television doing something for we're raising money for Washburn Culinary Students for Women. We have a GoFundMe, but Lou Canales, who is the voice of the Bears for your competitor for Fox, is also helping us, you know, because this is a Chicago issue that we really need to back all the efforts of the Greater Chicago Food Depository. So anything that you can do to help us kick hunger here in Chicago and across America, it's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, they do so much great work, and we'll have links up too for the Greater Chicago Food Depository. And Carrie, as we let you go, do you have a website or a place where people can go to get more information, get reservations, get out and see you at the restaurants?
You can go to brondi-chicago.com, and we'll look forward to welcoming you here. And thanks so much, Dane. Appreciate it. It's going to be a great game on Sunday.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it, Chef Carrie Nahabedi. And thanks so much
go Bears.
For jumping on the show. You bet.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, you think about this, some of the fine dining chefs, you think, okay, well, they're far removed from the sports side of things. And but, you know, when we talk about it, is I think if you're from the Chicago area, you have to, you're almost,
you have
it's
to
like
be
in
Chicago
DNA that you have to be
a sports fan.
A sports fan, yeah. Regardless of where you come down on as far as team loyalties.
And as far as, like, food, right? I mean, Carrie's like this incredible, you know, fine dining chef, and yet she's a big tailgate food fan. Because you know what? Tailgate food is delicious, and her food is delicious. It's just all about making really good food that people love.
It also brought up some of the, you know, she got a chance to mention some cool stuff, not cool necessarily, but on the comfort side, that are just kind of winter style traditional things that you just like this time of year. And I know over the last couple of weeks we've talked about, you know, some ramen opportunities and things that aren't necessarily the stuff July
that
you're thinking of eating. She mentioned like a French onion soup, which
it sounded so good.
It sounds really good.
Really good.
Are there?
And there was I think she talked about a mac and cheese, right? Wasn't there a mac and cheese involved in that situation? Something
there should be.
Yeah. But it was salad and bacon too.
Yeah,
it sounded really good.
So on the tailgate side, you don't necessarily always have to have sports to do that kind of thing and to barbecue. And so when we come back from the news, I'm excited to have, we're going to try to hook them up. We've got Mirko Leitner's going to be on with
so
us
cool.
now. This is, you know, we've already had Lou Bank calling in live from Oaxaca.
Right.
Talking a little bit about the mezcal situation. And so now Mirko is a guy that I got a chance to meet. He was at my judging table at the Jack, so the Jack Daniels World Barbecue Invitational. And they do, on the barbecue side, you know, you think of it as kind of, you know, America's indigenous food, right? Barbecue, as far as that kind of, you know, get out there with the smokers and,
but
you know,
it's reaching out there now. It's out there in the world, right? It's all over the world. I mean, I know like London has a huge, or England has a huge contingent of barbecue festivals and serious barbecue folks.
Our mutual friend Ray Lampe is out there as a kind of a celebrity ambassador for the barbecue world on a regular basis in England and for the Jack specifically. I think they had, and Mirko will be able to help out with maybe some of the specifics on this, but I think they had 20 to 30 teams from all around the world that came in and made within the KCBS kind of style, and that was, I think, the criteria on the judging side for some of it, but also bringing in kind of their international flair, their culture, their flavors, their like spices, thought process,
their techniques. Now, I just want to say one thing though, Dane. You were a judge at the Jack this year. This was your first year doing it, right?
First year judging that,
It's pretty amazing. That's pretty cool experience. Was it an amazing experience?
Yeah, it's pretty great. It was pretty great. I mean, if you're into barbecue at all, then obviously you're familiar with it. It's, you know, probably the preeminent competition. It's like the best of the best. So in order to even be there competing, you had to win one of the other world championships that specific year.
This is very, very serious competition.
Well, it's a lot of fun too.
But
these are people.
But
who,
to get named as a winner of the Jack, it's very prestigious. It's an affirming situation beyond as far as being a pit master and a barbecue guy, right?
And if you're one of those teams that do it, you certainly build it into your bio from there. Yeah, it's great. So excited to talk with Mirko. So he'll be calling in from Italy. WGN WGN high atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is Dane Neal here with you until 5 a.m. and Shotgun. We do have Beth Peterson. She is the author of the best-selling tailgate cookbook, a world food champion, part of MasterChef, all those kind of things, mm-hmm. right? Some serious street cred on the food side and on the international side. You know, I'm excited to have. And this has been one of those shows. Again, we talked with Lou Bank live from Oaxaca, Mexico. Mm-hmm. He called in, and this is a guy that I had the opportunity, the pleasure, right, and I think the privilege to be able to be a judge at the Jack Daniel's World Barbecue Invitational with. It's Mirko Leitner. Now, Mirko, welcome to WGN. Welcome to Chicago.
Hi, Bay. Nice to meet you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Now, for the listeners out there, now we've mentioned a couple times previewing the fact that you would be on. Is that so? You're calling from Italy, but you're from like the Tyrol region, right? You're up in the mountains of Italy, not necessarily what people would think of the streets of Rome. You're in kind of the mountain area.
Right. I'm in front of in the middle of the Alps with nearly 83,000 meters high. Mountains around me.
Oh, wow. It sounds beautiful. Hi, Mirko. This is Beth. How are you?
Hi. Fine. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
So you're looking at beautiful mountains right now.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Glad to be out of my kitchen. It's cold outside, but a little bit snowy.
Well, we have something in common. It's cold here in Chicago, but instead of mountains, we're looking at big, beautiful buildings.
Oh yeah, that's. I was in Chicago once. No, twice in my life right now. So I know that's similar.
Well, here's
to our skyline here.
So Mirko, you and I got a chance, and we talked a little bit about it on the program. We got a chance to be a part of the Jack Daniel's World Barbecue Invitational, where like the barbecue community, some of the greatest pitmasters in the world really come together and compete and all that kind of stuff. And there's a big international presence there. So talk a little bit about the barbecue world outside of America, how it's become more popular, and certainly you're a big part of that with the academy that you have.
That's true, yeah. We develop a grill academy in our region. We teach how to do barbecue in the American way, because it's not really familiar. We are doing mostly grilling in Italy, and the low and slow cooking is coming more and more popular over here. Also, contests are growing, and food sports are growing in Europe. We have 30 contests right now in Europe, so pretty excited to be one part of that circuit.
Now, is it the kind of thing where, and of course, Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, is a mutual friend of Beth's and of mine, and we talked about he goes over to England, you know, for grill stock and kind of helps them, or at least helps share, you know, the American way of barbecue, and it's become really, really popular in Italy, because you think about Italian cuisine, even whether it's, you know, in Northern Italy or some of the other cuisines that are going on. I mean, it's so beloved, right? You know, on the regular side of things, you know, everybody loves Italian cuisine, so much great food that happens over there. Is it a tough sell to build in the barbecue thing, or is it something that is getting more popular where you are?
It's getting more and more popular, and we ourselves develop our own old recipes that come from our grandma and grandpa cuisine out of. We try to interpret that recipes on the grill and barbecue side. So some stuff really make people crazy when they see cooking their old recipes on a grill. That's the funny part. And cooking outside is, even if it's cold, but the weather is never wrong for doing grill and barbecue. So.
Well, that is true. So what kind of recipes would you create that were old family recipes? What would you create on the grill?
We have something called dumplings with a hard bread and milk and cheese and some onions in, cooked normally in water.
Okay.
And we do something called a dumpling burger. We use that kind of pastry for the buns. Mm-hmm. We put some bacon and gorgonzola inside and have a beautiful small dish with a dumpling cooked on the grill.
Now that sounds like my kind of dumpling.
That's true, yeah.
Sounds great. A little gorgonzola in there. Yummy.
No, Mirko, and let the listeners know we're talking with Mirko Leitner. He is there with the MIG Alpine Grill and Barbecue Academy. Now, you said, hey, it's never, you know, weather, the weather can never be too bad, right? So that you can't enjoy some barbecue. And here in Chicago, we obviously barbecue year-round. You could be standing in a snowdrift and you'll still be sitting next to the grill. Talk a little bit about the weather conditions. I know you and I kind of communicated a few weeks ago where you were out there and the weather was actually really, really cold, right?
That's true, yeah. We have minus 11 degrees Celsius the last week. Now it's only minus 5 degrees Celsius. You have to change it into Fahrenheit. But in 3 weeks, we have our own contest here where we normally have minus 20 degrees Celsius.
Oh, wow.
With 1,600 meters high above sea level. We are 30 teams competing. That would be really, really, really extreme conditions to do barbecue, low and slow. It may be, hot and fast is difficult to achieve. That's the new way that some teams are cooking. But to bring the smokers up in temperature will be, a little bit harder than usual. And one guy from Florida came over. That would be funny for him again.
No, tell me that you're not, like, you know, standing close to the smoker the whole time. You get to run in a little bit, right? You can warm up a little bit and then come back out?
You can if you want, but
why would you do that?
We have some wooden. We build up 30 wooden sheds.
For
that event.
I see.
And that's one thing that's unique in the world, because nobody builds up wooden sheds for just a barbecue contest. But that gives the teams a little bit of solid floor ground to stand up and not freeze their feet. They can go inside in a heated tent, but the Norwegian guy, for example, a couple of years ago, told us, oh, that's pretty, his own temperature. So he likes that. It's not really cold.
He's just used to that. So
it's always a point of view to do that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So from Florida, maybe it's a little bit cold. From Italy also. For a Norwegian guy, just fresh. Yeah. We call it fresh. Until minus 30 degrees, it's fresh.
He's out there in his shorts. Now, you think about this. So you're dealing with some of the temperatures on that side, and you mentioned some of the kind of the different recipes that you're building into it. So 30 teams there. What are they cooking? Are you doing any of the, you know, KCBS, you know, type either parameters or the judging criteria, or do you have your own kind of way that people are judging the stuff you guys are making?
Are there burnt ends involved?
Burnt ends, for sure. If a team can do some pretty good burnt ends, I assume they will win the contest. But we have another specialty that we have already a mystery box in place where we put some hidden ingredients in a hidden basket that the teams didn't know until cook's meeting. It's a normal, regular KCBS contest on Saturday to Sunday, as in Europe. We changed the dates. We always had the KCBS contest on Sunday. On Saturday, we do steaks.
Oh,
steak,
yeah.
And hot dog from SCA, from Steak Cook-Off Association. So two American organizations support us in doing the contest in Europe. And we are always the first contest in Europe. Not in KCBS circuit. It's the Northwestern contest, I think, in Kansas. That's or in Denver. That should be first. But we are the second in the world to doing barbecue contest from KCBS. Also from SCA, we are the second. And we do a KCBS judging class also.
Wow.
Okay. In here, in our academy. So this year we have 30 new judges that we bring out. Last year it was 30, 50, something like that. So we have 200 judges that we already, 35 to be a KCBS judge.
So you've got the KCBS, you know, and so you'll be able to carry the torch for a lot of the techniques and everything that we're doing here in America. Now, are people familiar with, do they know who, let's say, a Myron Mixon is? Do they watch as, like, pitmasters being translated into Norwegian and Italian? Do you guys know? I mean, obviously you do, Mirko, because you get a chance to hang out with them here in America for some of the things. But some of the other teams, are they familiar with these guys?
Oh, yeah. they're really familiar with these guys. As Pitmasters is in Italian and also in German, translated. So we know them from TV. I had the pleasure to meet some of them directly at the DAC and 2 years ago at the World Food Championships in Alabama. So it is always funny. If you go into that circuit, you are really, really, really close family. That's the nicest thing of barbecue. So even if the world is big, in barbecue behind the grill, it becomes really, really, really close to each other.
Oh, that's awesome.
It is. It's hard for me to imagine. I've got to see that. Maybe, Mercury, you can send me a link to some video. It's hard for me to imagine Myron Mixon being dubbed into Italian.
That could be a funny stuff. If you can arrange it, Myron Mixon comes, we have a spot free for him always.
Oh, so here's the thing. And for the rest of the show, we've got, you know, obviously sports, big sports fans, Chicago, and we've got football and all that kind of stuff. And the Bears are doing very well here into Chicago. And a lot of times, the grilling and the barbecue side of things is built into the tailgate side. Do you guys ever, you know, for sporting events, I don't know, soccer, I'm not sure what
for your football,
yeah, for whatever sporting events, do you guys do any kind of barbecue, any kind of tailgating over there in Italy?
A little bit, but not so much. That's not really there is something in the stadiums or in the small arenas that we have. There is some food prepared, but not really that kind of tailgating that you're doing in the States.
I think it sounds
that
like
would
there's
be something.
Hmm? I think there's that sounds like there's room for some new things outside the stadium.
Oh,
right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure, that is. If we don't have that, I call it regulations, that the European Union and the Italian government and all this stuff brings up. Because when you do that, you have to have the certification to do that. Oh my God, that's the ugliest thing of doing that.
I see.
But yeah, if you have a spot, you can do that.
It
could be funny also on doing that with hockey. Maybe that could be funny.
Listen, if you need any help with it, I have a tailgate cookbook. I'm happy to come on over to Italy and hang out with you in the mountains of
in the Alps.
In the Alps, and you know, show everybody how to tailgate.
Yeah, come over.
All right.
All right. So middle of January. So
yeah, the
come
red,
over.
The red carpet has been rolled out, and I think this is really great because as big as the world is, like you mentioned, Mirko, and as many differences as we may have, whether it's culturally or politically or whatever, in all sorts of different corners of the world, one thing, and you hit on it too, is that the barbecue world is together, right? Is very communal, very supportive. Everybody has a lot of that stuff in common, and it's great to see a lot of the support that you guys are doing with that, not only on the contest side, but on the KCBS side and all that. And so before we let you go, give the website out, and we'll put a link at WGNradio.com as well. Put a link to the contest that you guys have coming up or to places where people can get some more information and see what you're doing.
Oh, that's fine, yeah. Visit us on www.mig.bz. That would be funny. There you find any information regarding contests, ourselves, our book that we recently bring out. So a lot of stuff around the MIG.
All right. Thanks, Mirko. Thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for carrying the torch for great barbecue and carrying it all the way over to the Alps and Italy. And thanks for jumping on the show tonight.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you. See you soon and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy New Year to you, too.
All right. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have a little bit more on the resolution side. Stay tuned. We've got some more interviews as well on the tailgate side and some great stuff coming up, plus more with Beth. So keep it here. It is Dane here on 720 WGN. Mm-hmm. 720 WGN here, high atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is Dane in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. today, riding shotgun. We do have Beth Peterson. She is the author of the Tailgate Cookbook, the best-selling tailgate cookbook. Now, things you knew that people like to tailgate, right?
Yeah. I mean,
typically, you like to tailgate. Did a ton of that stuff. So you figured, like, hey, let's write a book about it. But were you surprised at how well that book has been received, you know, because it's been for a long time. It was the number one in this category for quite a while.
Yeah. It came out in August and it did well right out of the gate. I think we timed it pretty well, but not surprised because people, you know, when you go out to a tailgate, folks are passionate about their tailgate. I mean, you talk about the competition in the stadium. There is a lot of competition outside of the stadium to bring the best tailgate dish, you know, the one that, that actually gets gobbled up the first and gets talked about and becomes the storied tailgate bite of the tailgate. So it's you know, people are passionate about it. They love it.
It was cool to get a chance to talk with. And when we were at the Jack, you know, there's, like I said, people from maybe 20 to 30 different countries coming in at a high level, you know, great enough. In order to get in on that, we talked about how on the competition side, it's a special thing. So you either have to win one of the world championships, mm-hmm. you know, the American Royal or Memphis in May and some of these other ones in order, or the Jack itself in order to be able to cook that next year. And on the international side, you have to win like your country's championship,
right,
in order to get over there. So you're seeing people that take it pretty seriously, and it's
the food sports really, it's starting to expand beyond, you know, the United States. It sounds to me like, you know, it's there in Italy and London, and it's really and then now coming back to the United States.
Well, you and I have talked with Ray a bunch, you know, about grill stock and things, and he would say that originally, and this is just a handful of years, and I think with the internet, people are, you know, the learning curve is quick, right? It isn't just, you know, old world recipes that need to be handed down. You can find out, hey, I can find out how to, you know, replace the headlight in the car really quick, or mm-hmm. how to, you know, fix the
how
furnace.
How to get rid of a raccoon.
How to get rid of a raccoon. 312-981-7200.
In three short steps.
Yeah. I mean, you can, hopefully, I don't know. I'm sure there's got to be lots of videos that say how to go ahead and get rid of a raccoon. But now you can find out some different things. And we've seen people, you know, get in on that. You get a little bit of pushback on some things because you think as great as barbecue in general is, mm-hmm. you know, people like Ray will say that a lot of times on the competition side that, you know, it is what it is. It's very kind of specific in the way that it's done on the judging side, mm-hmm. but it may not always be, you know, the best way to enjoy, you know, barbecue at a tailgate.
Sure. Right. Oh, for sure. I mean, it's a long, you know, a lot of the stuff in competition, it's a long process, right? So the low and slow, you got to get out there pretty darn early if you're going to be tailgating and doing some competition style barbecue. That's for sure. So you've got to, you know, the thing about tailgating and bringing food out there and cooking is that you do have to be, you got to be flexible, and you got to understand that it may not be exactly the way you had planned because you're out in the elements a lot of times and, you know, equipment maybe doesn't do exactly what you want it to do and all that kind of thing. So you got to be flexible out there. So
what
competition style, probably not where you're at with tailgate.
We did get a text come in saying and wondering, and this is maybe some of the things that you'll know too, even on the World Food Championship side, as far as some of the challenges. You know, if you're up in a mountain, not only do you have those temperature issues to try to maintain, you know, very specific temperatures for a long period of time, it's got to be really, really hard. But then also, too, it's just the altitude.
Yeah.
I know for the, and we've mentioned the World Food Championships, you know, even in Vegas, right? It was, it's a higher altitude place. The air is a little bit thinner. It was difficult to work with.
Yeah, it was definitely difficult to work with. And the thing about food competition, like the tailgating, cooking is a lot like that if you decide that you're going to prepare food out there because you just don't know about the equipment and how it's always going to work out. And the timing is always, and plus you're there to have a good time as well. You might have a cocktail or two while you're in the process of it. The food competition part of it is super exciting because of all of those different elements. And, you know, at the end of the day in a food competition, you're trying to win a prize. So the challenges that are thrown in are really, you know, are really stuff that make it really exciting, actually.
What would be your suggestion? Had a text come in from the 815 for somebody, let's say their skill or the thing that they're kind of looking to do in 2019 is participate or get into kind of like food competitions.
Yeah.
You know, some of the TV side, and you'd be the first to say too, some of it's, you know, more TV than it is competition,
yes,
right?
A lot of stuff orchestrated behind the
scenes.
There's
a lot of, you know, extra things, kind of noise around that thing. It isn't always just a straight, like, how good are you doing this? And you pop out on the other side. For TV, they're trying to build in a lot of drama and things like that. But
for sure.
So are there suggestions? Like, what would someone do in order to get, whether it is on the barbecue side? Certainly there's contests all over the place, right?
Yeah, there's tons of contests. There's a competition site called Cooking, I think it's called Cooking Contest Cooking Central, Cooking Contest Central. I think that's what it is. I think if you Google that, something will come up that will match that. And basically, they have a listing of all of the food competitions that are non-grilling, non-barbecue related. They're a lot of times put on by, you know, Pillsbury or, you know, different brands. But it's a really fun, good way to sort of kind of put your toe in the water and to figure out how to sort of become a competitor on the circuit, because there's a lot of food competitions and food competitors out there. So it's a big, it's kind of a big world of food competition. And one of the big ones is the World Food Championships, which you've talked about a couple of times. I'm actually one of the winners of the World Food Championships. And that was sort of my midpoint in food competitions that led me to more food media, where, you know, then I was doing, I did a couple of competitions with the Food Network. I was on Cutthroat Kitchen. And the one thing I can say, if you're listening out there and this is something that you're interested in doing, it's really fun and exciting and really very challenging, but it's a really cool experience. I've met tons and tons of people and made friends. It's awesome.
I think if you approach it like that, where you approach it from the fun side, you know, even the KCBS, if you look on their site and you say like, hey, you want to get into this, you don't get into it to, you know, to become Myron Mixon and, right, and make a living at it. You know, you do it because you love it. And down the road, if you're good and successful and you put your work into it, you know, there'll be a lot of ways that you can kind of be rewarded. I think it's important that you mention too, that there's a lot of different little niches to be in, whether it's baking this or whether it's, you know, whether you're making macaroni and cheese or whether you're doing a tailgate competition or barbecue. There's a bunch of different ways. For World Food Championship, which covers a lot of different categories, everything from burgers to brisket to, like, your winning dish was actually, wasn't it like a pasta dish?
It was pasta, yeah. Right. That particular year, they had an infused ingredient, it was bison, and the category was pasta. I don't know if they have a pasta category any longer, but yeah, so I won for pasta and bison, one of the chefs here in Chicago was one of my mentors for the bison. Michael Cornick was one of my mentors. I don't know if you know that story, but yeah, he was out there for the competition, and I knew that he was, you know, all about the bison. And so I tapped him the night before the competition, asked him some questions, and guess what? I won.
Yeah. He's been a great look at, like, DMK, right?
Yeah.
Burger and a bunch of different things. Because I think Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives guy shot. I remember being at his place while they were shooting an episode of Triple D as well. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to go to news in just a second. When we come back, one of the top competitions out there reached 10 years. It was Grand Cochon. And so we got an opportunity to talk with Brady Lowe and his sister Erin as they have created that. And it's hosted, the Grand Cochon used to be in Aspen. And now, of course, I've covered it out there as well. Now here in Chicago, excited to hear.
I can't believe it's been 10 years.
10 years.
Wow.
So we'll get a chance to hear from them. And then after that, before the end of the program, we're going to give away a copy of the Tailgate Cookbook by Beth. She'll autograph it as well. And so we'll figure out the best way to give that away.
Hey, this is Brady Lowe with Cochon 555, Taste Network, and the Piggy Bank. And you're on the road with Dane Neal on WGN.
WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high atop Chicagoland. And when you look out over Chicagoland and the greater Midwest, this is a great food town with amazing chefs and restaurants and events. And I have said it before so many times, the greatest culinary tour on this planet or any other is Cochon 555, just wrapping up its 10th year. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, baseball, it's going up now. And I wonder, if Abner Doubleday didn't, you know, think the game up, right, we'd never be celebrating that. The same goes with Heritage Breed Pork. And in studio is the visionary founder, along with his sister, who's been such a big part and driving force with the tour as well, Brady Lowe and Erin Lowe. Guys, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dane.
Thank you, Dane.
You know, yeah, no, it's great to have you guys here. It's great to have you here whenever you're here, because, you know, whenever you're here, the party is here, right? The celebratory circus is in town, the Super Bowl of swine, all that. Nobody gets excited more than food fans and a lot of the chefs as well. And this was no exception. 10 years. So, Brady, as we kind of remember back just a few fun-filled hours ago, you know, how was it? How was the 10th bigger and better, or was it just a nice way to look back and enjoy the ride?
It's a great question. I mean, we've been on the road for 10 years, and it's a lot of energy and a lot of positioning and education, and to get it to one point, offering that conversation to the audience and to the chefs to say, like, you know, we've been working on this one moment for 10 years. And that was what happened with Grand Cochon in Chicago. You know, it took us 3 years to move it to Chicago and to have the right energy. And that was one of the aspects of it. But we also left a home where we started it, which was at the Food and Wine Classic, where, you know, we got to hang out many times. And to kind of dislodge that and bring it to Chicago, to bring it back to family and bring it back to the homeland where, you know, where we were raised, and what I know is like the first food city to me, coming into D'Amato's and coming into Uno's and going to, you know, Ricci's Net Company, like those elements were what started my kind of passion with food. So to move it back here, it was amazing.
Well, when you get into the kind of that situation with the food city and the farms and the greater Midwest and all that kind of stuff, and to let the listeners know, people who enjoy it here, you know, Cochon is everywhere. You know, you guys do it all over the place, even outside the country, but certainly cities that aren't necessarily associated with farms, you know, the West Coast, you know, Florida, Miami, New York, and all those kind of things. And starting that conversation, here's the thing. It's one thing to put together an event to create something that is fun, that works, that maybe even is a decent business and brings people together and they have a good time. But the message from day one has always been to start that conversation, raise that conversation, spread and extend that conversation of heritage breed pork. And is it as easy to do here, where maybe it's more relevant than it is maybe in a Miami or a New York, or is it something that everybody kind of gets?
I think it's hard everywhere. You know, I think last night, you know, the conversation that we had on stage with, you know, the Grand Cochon audience versus 7 years ago doing Grand Cochon, it was more of a party and more of like, hey, here are three words, heritage breed pigs, put it in your mouth, say it, eat it. If you do it, you support a farmer. Last night, the conversation turned to, what does the food future look like? Where is our food going to be coming from in the next, you know, 30 years? What can you do? And it's really just like having a conversation, understanding that 90% of our farmers right now across North America are 60 years old. So if you have 90% of your farmers at that age group, what does it look like? And to see that evolution go from 0 to 60, here are three words, heritage breed pigs, talking about all the different things we've talked about over 10 years, and then to end with educating the audience, that message needs to be told everywhere. And I think everyone in that room is going to be the same as Miami. You know, there's a little bit more connection here because of it's, you know, there's people know more in agriculture.
Just the words from, there's always been a big educational component built into it, and it has gone from something where you felt like you needed to bring people in. It's like, okay, here's me, here's you, you've got a whiteboard, you're kind of doing it, and now people get it. And the goal of not only sharing it, kind of sharing it under that umbrella, that tent of a great event where you're having a great time and you're wondering what's this all about, but also on the chefs, kind of urging them to start using it, and then ultimately having a public that understands what it is and wants it, right? And then wants to, I mean, having been there since basically the beginning, it has come all that full circle way. It's exciting to see how far it's gone. When it comes to the events, you know, none of this happens without a lot of that exciting stuff. And we've got Aaron Lowe in studio as well, your sister growing up with you. And so you think about these people who do these things, you know, create these events that go on and impact and change people's lives in a lot of different ways. Was Brady always that guy when he was a kid where you're like, or was he kind of a ringmaster, Ned? Was he kind of like getting people together? Let's do this. Let's do that. Always trying to put something together.
Always trying to put something together. Maybe not always more of the naughty kid, I would say. Never going to be put in the box. 6 years younger than me. So to see his energies directed when he got into college and then after moving to Atlanta and getting into the food business and starting Taste Network and doing the wine and cheese educations and just all of those driving points that brought him to Cochon and then to come to work for him has been, I mean, I don't even really know how to put it into words, but I laughed because we had dinner the other night and one of the things he said was, you know, everybody in here, I know sometimes I'm not the easiest person to work for. I'm not the most communicative at times, but I think what Brady
didn't say
does.
The communication part.
Well, he said something like that. Anyways,
he doesn't always share his feelings. You'll go to the greeting card store. He's like, I don't always say it, but, you know.
You can talk at me. It's just about talking with me.
What he does do, though, is he pushes people. He challenges people. He challenges thought. He's very, very creative. And you never really know what's going to come out of his mouth, but you can see when he gets something in his mind and he wants to make it happen, he makes it happen.
He does, and he doesn't do it alone. He'd be the first to say that it's part of a big team, and not only a team that you guys have kind of at that core at HQ, but also kind of, you know, inspiring these teams of people who make up these different events, and that's kind of what it is, right? You've got to be sort of this motivational speaker, this Tony Robbins of Heritage Breed Pork, to kind of get people together, get them motivated, get them excited to do things. It was interesting you talked about it, and Aaron, you mentioned it, Atlanta, right? And that's where the first event was. Brady, talk about, for those people that, you know, as the smoke is cleared and everybody is going back to wherever it is that they're from, saying, what a great party, this is great, I can't wait till it happens again. The first one, what was it like?
It was gritty, you know? It was like, it was a moment. You could just tell, like, going into a room, you had five chefs, you had Alan Benton, I mean, Kevin Rathbun, Todd Mussman, Jay Swift. You had these, like the leaders, you know, in the South at that point. I mean, there was really no farm to table. It was a kind of a lighter conversation, you know. I mean, there was, so looking at everybody's response to, like, all right, now we're at an event and there's Heritage Breed pigs here. I had no idea what this is. And I looked down and a farmer's eating off, like, the plate hits the ground. No one wants the food to go to waste because it's so good. And they're eating off the ground. Like, that doesn't happen today. Maybe it still does a little bit, but it was just a different moment, you know. And it was at that point we decided that, you know, hey, like, people need to know about this. They need to know that people care that much about their food, what they're raising, what they're bringing to an event, what the chefs are cooking with, and then they have to appreciate it to a point where they got to pay for it to keep those people in business. And that's been the one thing, I think, when you mentioned, like, Tony Robbins and creation and motivation, the thing that just kind of sparked was, to do this, you need to figure out what people's problems are. The first 3 to 5 years, all I did was talk to farmers. And I listened to their losses, their wins, their rewards, the things that challenge them every day. And we spent hours and hours on phone trying to figure out what these problems are, because you got to have a problem to figure out a solution. And if you're going to have a solution, that's going to be sustainability. And that's the sustainability of keeping people in business. And that's bottom line. And since this has grown, we started with the farm community. We got a chef community behind us. But then, you know, working with Aaron and trying to really, like, what is our job is to get, you know, the people, like the sponsors, to come on and to start a conversation in a corporate America about why this is important. But that always starts with the same thing. Like, when we get on a call, like, to explore, it's like, what's your problem? Tell us. Like, let us try to figure out what your problem and how we can be an opportunity for you. And I think that's between farms and chefs. And today, you know, sponsors to create a movement.
To have those groups, and that is one of the things, is not only do you have them and kind of their perspective built in to the event or the DNA of the event, but they're participating. You know, they're right there front and center for you, whether it's the farms, whether it is the sponsors, right? That's a great way to get them showcased and to attach themselves to an event that is, I think, uniquely cool. There's a lot of events. I've been to every single one of them all over the country, probably all over the world. And one of the things that makes Cochon special, and you mentioned some of those great chefs from day one, is that for some reason you're able to inspire and get, like, the best chefs available for, and wherever it is that you go, you know, whether it's the great ones here in Chicago, and you can put, name them all down the list. Everybody has participated to some of the best, you know, chefs on television and all that kind of stuff. They get in and they get it from the get-go and they participate. Then you've got the music side of it too. You know, guys, was that part of it? Because it is a very unique event from an experience standpoint, too. I mean, it's like the coolest thing.
Yeah, I mean, since day one, we've had I've DJed, I have turntables at home, and remember coming into town, and, like, Paul Kahn, I found out he had, like, tables and collected vinyl, and I collected vinyl, so I, like, immediately sent him my favorite album, you know, just out of the dark, like, just as, you know, anonymous gift. And finally, like, a year later.
It wasn't Barry Manilow, was it?
No.
Because there were some hits on those.
It was the Miles Davis, Jax Johnson tribute. Nice.
Okay,
album.
Gotcha.
And, you know, it's just, you get to a point where everything has to be kind of working to make it an experience. And, you know, every year we have a playlist on Spotify. And then, like, yesterday we had DJ Lord of Public Enemy, who's on tour right now with Prophets of Rage. And, you know, he looks at our perspectives of 10 years of music. I send him a playlist, and boom, you know, he brings it all back to life. So it's every little piece has to make a detail, the guest experience.
To get to 10 years in an event to where it is, I think, as anticipated as ever, it is as exciting as ever. It isn't as though you limped into 10 years and like, oh my God, we survived, right? It's like, where do you go from here? And you said at the event, 10 years, you know, towards the next 30 and that kind of stuff. And but when you think about it, so the future, you've got so many building blocks here. You've got an army of supporters. You've got all of these people that are kind of counting on you, working with you on the farm side, the community side, and certainly some sponsors that depend on what it is that you do to make it work. What do you see going forward for year 11, 12, 30?
I think the conversation has to be in bringing more people into the conversation. I mean, literally, it's have a conversation to create more conversation. And that's the only thing that I see is really kind of this impact and this social impact movement is the more you have people engaged, the more they see what it is and how it can impact their life or their social system. That's where I see this is kind of trending is I would love to see more kids get into farming, where I want to take the energy of what this tour has and say, hey, how can we take chia pets and how can we take sea monkeys and how can we put that seed in the minds of 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds? And how do we get them growing? How do we get them seed packets where they're like triggering, like, I want to be a fireman. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a farmer. Because at that age, that's where it happens. And that is what's going to trigger the next 10 for the other 30. And that's the important part, because those kids who are 10 now are going to be 30 later, and those are the ones who need to be farmers. And anything we can do now is going to make that happen. So it's interesting to like be with my sister and watch, you know, in the last 7 years, like her food system at home changed with around her kids and what they do and how they eat. And knowing that that's happening at different layers at the event is just kind of a reminder.
We're talking with Koshone 555, Grand Koshone founder Brady Lowe, and Aaron Lowe is in studio as well. Last thing, it was really cool, and I brought up the kind of the similarities and just the way that it felt in a room where I remember it was a wine seminar at Aspen, I don't know how many years ago, it might have been 7, 8 years ago, and we all kind of realized at one point that Marguerite Mondavi was in the crowd with us as we were talking about California wines and how it all started and that kind of stuff, and it was kind of cool to have sort of that same, I'm like, whoa, there's Brady's mom, there's your guys, there's Aaron's mom. So last thing, talk about what that was, how cool it was, you know, what your mom thinks about all this, what she thought about it maybe as it was kind of forming, and then how cool it was to have her there with you last night.
You know, I mean, my mom has always, you know, said she's like the biggest fan, the biggest groupie, and wants to travel, and you know, everybody is busy in life and they can do what they can and when they can, but she's just always been so interested, like every single cookbook. I mean, that's where I learned how to cook was her cookbook collection, and her interest and adventure of cooking and always making something different and win or lose, depending on how your kids eat or if they'll eat it. So she's always loved that chance and that risk. And that's the one thing that she was saying last night on the stage was that she's just always been amazed how we just overcome our challenges. And I think that is what's really important to being a chef, being a farmer, being a partner, is just always trying to figure out how to overcome those challenges so you do see the sustainable side of your life, you know?
I was just going to say, I know that Brady touched on her being a groupie and taking inspiration from what my parents started in the food, you know, interest for us. But she is obviously very, very proud of him. And for her to be able to see last night and just kind of the culmination of 10 years and what he's created, I think was a big moment for all of us, honestly.
It's great to have that support system. And you guys both, Brady and Aaron, have been a support system, not only for great events, great times, amazing, unforgettable experiences for food fans and chefs, but also in industry and farmers. And again, supporting that conversation as well. Koshone 555 is the website, koshone555.com. Go there, get all the information, how you can get involved, support piggybank.org, all the different ways that they are changing the world. And guys, thanks again for everything that you do. And I mean it like in the biggest way. It's such an understatement to say that. And thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, Dane. Appreciate being here.
WGN, it is Dane here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Hi, atop Chicago. Beth Peterson riding shotgun for the duration of the program. And of course, you know her from from MasterChef World Food Championships and, of course, the best-selling cookbook, The Tailgate Cookbook. And it's kind of a luxury to have you here as people kind of put together not only those plans for 2019 we've gone through, and thanks to everybody who've kind of added in and shared their resolutions, but also for planning, you know, whatever that that kind of New Year's Eve, yeah. you know, party should be. Oftentimes, you know, there's a lot of times you'll go out there and maybe you're in the room with a slightly sweaty Janet Davies and a Mark Giangreco, right, as they're doing their show. But if you're going to, you know, try to kind of, I guess, host that event.
Yeah, most people aren't doing that. Most people are at home, you know, or maybe they're going out to, you know, to a restaurant. But if they're home, which, like, most of the time I spend New Year's Eves at home because I've got kids, and so we try and make it special at the house. And, you know,
what are some things that you can do to make it special, whether it's the sparkling grape juice,
mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's putting on, you know, I guess Ryan Seacrest and the New Year's Rockin' Eve kind
of
thing.
Do that for sure. Yeah.
But on the food side, is there ways to build in maybe some tailgate style elements into it, some cool things into your New Year's Eve at home?
Oh yeah. That's the thing about the cookbook and just tailgate food in general. It's that really delicious, yummy food and fun food, right? So it translates really well to a party like this. The one thing I can say is that my kids can eat their weight in shrimps. And New Year's Eve is the night for the shrimps. We do the boiled shrimp and the cocktail sauce and, you know, just shrimp cocktails for everybody all around. And, you know, we go through like 100 pounds of shrimp, or no, not
really,
100, but a lot of shrimp. My sister has three kids as well, and so we just bring them together, and my goodness, they can eat some shrimp.
So what are the ways to enjoy? Because for our guys, you know, Maxwell has been long time, it was the forbidden fruit. He was he was allergic to shrimp, and he wasn't able to eat shrimp, but I think we're sort of, he's sticking his big toe into the whole water of maybe it's okay.
Okay, good. And maybe he's outgrown the allergy to it.
Yeah, he's doing some crab and some lobster, and so he's underwhelmed, and thank goodness for this. Is it, he doesn't really like lobster that much?
He's just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, did you not butter it up for him, or what?
Well,
happened?
We did, or we thought we did, but he was just a little underwhelmed, which I see as a blessing.
You know, he probably been hearing lobster's so amazing, lobster's so good. Then he went and tried, and he was like, it's good.
Yeah. That's what he thought. So on the shrimp side, is cocktail sauce, is that the best way to enjoy it?
You know, okay, so I do an Old Bay steaming situation for the shrimp, but like a lot of people might serve that warm. Usually I'm trying to do things ahead of time, so I always do it and then put it in the fridge, and it's more of like a Old Bay shrimp cocktail situation. So they combine the Old Bay encrusted shrimp with cocktail sauce. This is a good thing if people are, you know, kind of getting ready for breakfast. Does this sound like it's a good you're going to be hungry for shrimp all day out there, folks.
I'm sure I don't know if there are any breakfast cereals that are shrimp flavored. I don't think there are. So on the beverage side, and again, maybe this isn't, you got to think about, I guess, the context. So it is, you know, early morning, people are waking up, they're going to be heading maybe to work in a little bit, and so the thought of what kind of cocktails to have on your New Year's Eve may not be, you know, as like, you know, current events in your life situation, but people are planning. Like you said, the best thing you could do is plan ahead.
Well, I'm a big fan of a champagne cocktail. Very, very yummy. The one from New Orleans with the sugar in it.
Wait a minute.
The French 75.
Okay.
Right? I think it's got just a sugar cube in it, and it probably has something else in there. I can't remember. I'm going to do those this year. And the other fun thing that we do is we have the glasses. They're plastic champagne glasses that look like the old fashioned champagne glasses.
Right.
And we make the tower and we do the pour of the champagne. We put a big tray underneath it, and we set the whole thing up, and the kids think that's fabulous. They don't get any of it, obviously, but they think it's pretty fun to watch us do that.
And so these are with the, you know, the champagne, where it's the very wide.
Yes, the wide. Know, the and wide. You stack them.
It's kind
and
of
you
a shell.
Pour from the top. And
that sounds absolutely terrifying.
It's a mess, but it's super fun to do.
Does it actually work? Can you actually, you know, and our good friend Belinda Chang will talk a little bit about, and whenever she goes with a suitcase filled with all the glasses, and I don't think they're plastic necessary.
No, mine are plastic.
To go ahead and put that together. It sounds terrifying.
But you put a big tray underneath it, so it's not so terrifying, and get some cheaper champagne. That's the way I do it. Belinda Chang doesn't do it that way at all, but that's the way I do it. And then the next morning, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, peach Bellinis are a big thing. So,
well, that sounds pretty good.
They're delicious.
Here's the thing, too, and what the listeners may not necessarily know, we've talked a lot of the food side of Beth, but also on the party side. And you'll see her on your news broadcast talking about how to set up and get ready for your tailgating, your home getting, even on the decoration side. And so in a second or two, we're going to talk like how can you sort of kind of New Year's Eve up your space, maybe even on the decoration or the decor side. But we wanted to, like, 312-981-7200. We're going to give away a copy of the Tailgate Cookbook to the fifth caller. They can go ahead and do it, 312-981-7200. So we have a couple minutes left here. So as people are kind of figuring out what they're going to do and hopefully calling in and getting their hands on the book. So how do you go ahead and set up the as far as, like, decorations wise, because I think, you know, you've got the noisemakers, those are super annoying. You've got the paper hats and things like
all that. All the traditional stuff. I do all that, the traditional stuff and just the tchotchke kind of New Year's Eve stuff. I don't get too fancy because, again, like, we've got the kids. So I do more activities. When the kids were younger, I taped a four square game down in the basement floor, you know, try and set up activities throughout the night for them. And then, of course, we let them stay up late, and we do give everybody a little sip of the champagne, just a little sip.
Isn't that illegal?
Probably. They're older now. We can't get in trouble for it now. But no, a little teeny sip to make them feel like they're, you know, part of the fun. And, you know, we go outside and we shoot up, you know, we don't shoot the shotgun. We do the, like, those little bottle things where you just pull them and then they, you know, confetti comes out or whatever. And we dance around and listen to the whatever the station is and dance. And
the station is WGN Radio.
Of course. I mean, WGN Radio. Right. Exactly what we do.
All right. Well, it's going to be great. We've got a bunch of people lined up, and so we'll get with you right after we're done with the program. I want to stay tuned for the opening bell with Bennett Wake Night. That is going to be absolutely cool.